image of those who have walked before me here. I am cast in the web of an ancient spell. I'm holding on to life, I'm drifting in a stream. Everything's much clearer now, we live within a dream and never away.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 10th, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Excuse me. All right, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We're in John chapter 8 tonight. It's being read by Alexander Scorby. So John chapter 8 by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 8. Jesus went unto the Mount of Olives. And early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what sayest thou? This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down, and with his finger wrote on the ground, as though he heard them not. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself, and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Then spake Jesus again unto them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. The Pharisees therefore said unto him, Thou bearest record of thyself, thy record is not true. Jesus answered and said unto them, Though I bear record of myself, yet my record is true. For I know whence I came and whither I go, but ye cannot tell whence I come and whither I go. Ye judge after the flesh. I judge no man. And yet if I judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone, but I and the Father that sent me. It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. I am one that bear witness of myself, and the Father that sent me beareth witness of me. Then said they unto him, Where is thy Father? Jesus answered, Ye neither know me nor my Father. If ye had known me, ye should have known my Father also. These words spake Jesus in the treasury, as he taught in the temple, and no man laid hands on him, for his hour was not yet come. Then said Jesus again unto them, I go my way, and ye shall seek me, and shall die in your sins. Whither I go, ye cannot come. Then said the Jews, Will he kill himself? Because he saith, Whither I go, ye cannot come. And he said unto them, Ye are from beneath, I am from above. Ye are of this world, I am not of this world. I said therefore unto you that ye shall die in your sins. For if ye believe not that I am he, ye shall die in your sins. Then said they unto him, Who art thou? And Jesus saith unto them, Even the same that I said unto you from the beginning. I have many things to say and to judge of you. But he that sent me is true, and I speak to the world those things which I have heard of him. They understood not that he spake to them of the Father. Then said Jesus unto them, When ye have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall ye know that I am he, and that I do nothing of myself. But as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. And he that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him. As he spake these words, many believed on him. Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, If ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. They answered him, We be Abraham's seed, and were never in bondage to any man. How sayest thou, ye shall be made free? Jesus answered them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin. And the servant abideth not in the house forever, but the Son abideth forever. If the Son therefore shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed. I know that ye are Abraham's seed, but ye seek to kill me, because my word hath no place in you. I speak that which I have seen with my Father, and ye do that which ye have seen with your father. They answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father. Jesus saith unto them, If ye were Abraham's children, ye would do the works of Abraham. But now ye seek to kill me, a man that hath told you the truth, which I have heard of God. This did not Abraham. Ye do the deeds of your father. Then said they to him, We be not born of fornication, we have one Father, even God. Jesus said unto them, If God were your Father, ye would love me. For I proceeded forth and came from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do ye not understand my speech? Even because ye cannot hear my word. Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. and because I tell you the truth, ye believe me not. Which of you convinceth me of sin? And if I say the truth, why do ye not believe me? He that is of God heareth God's words. Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God. Then answered the Jews and said unto him, Say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil? Jesus answered, I have not a devil, but I honor my Father, and ye do dishonor me. And I seek not mine own glory. There is one that seeketh and judgeth. Verily, verily, I say unto you, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. Then said the Jews unto him, Now we know that thou hast a devil. Abraham is dead, and the prophets. And thou sayest, if a man keep my saying, he shall never taste of death. Art thou greater than our father Abraham, which is dead, and the prophets are dead? Whom makest thou thyself? Jesus answered, If I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father that honoreth me, of whom ye say that he is your God. Yet ye have not known him, but I know him. And if I should say, I know him not, I shall be a liar, like unto you, but I know him, and keep his saying. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it, and was glad. Then said the Jews unto him, Thou art not yet 50 years old, and hast thou seen Abraham? Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. Then took they up stones to cast at him, but Jesus hid himself, and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by.
Okay, sorry, I thought I was unmuted, but I was muted. Anyway, Terry, Jan's traveling, isn't he? I don't think he's...
Yes, he is. I'm trying to play the role of Jan tonight.
Okay, all right. Do we have any announcements before we...
I have no announcements. I have two questions.
Okay, no announcements, though.
No. Okay. My hand got tangled. No announcements.
We'll take the questions.
Okay, so the first one is... by Kaylin, and it's just a little bit long, but it ends up being pretty quick there. It says, I've been looking for help with the illegal search of my home and purse, and putting jail made me give my DNA and made me bail out of jail, and then never charging me with me never seeing a judge was posted on a business page. A mugshot stating I was arrested for this has made me look bad to anyone looking for my business. This is all over me writing. A complaint because of the misconduct of the adult probation. So she was in there because she wrote a complaint about adult probation. They retaliated on my family. Can you tell me what I can do about this? Who will help me? I just would like to know where to turn because of what they have been doing, violating my rights. Please get back to me, Kate.
Well, you know, the courts are out of control. Our government is out of control. You know, our nation was taken over by bar attorneys. They have totally destroyed everything we have. They've destroyed the courts. They've abrogated common law. The United States Supreme Court does not recognize common law. The United States Supreme Court doesn't recognize the Bill of Rights. They don't even recognize the Constitution in its whole at all. Now, a lot of people find that hard to really digest. But those of us who have been in the courts, we know what's going on. We understand. Look what Congress is doing. So, you know, it's hard to believe, but I wouldn't say that I don't believe, because they're just pursuing, you know, worse and worse things against us. I mean, the idea of them taking DNA, that's just amazing. But again, you know, that's where we're heading to. You know, your papers, please. You know, unfortunately, there's not too much to do. It sounds like she's not held in the court. This is a woman speaking, right? Jan?
Sounds,
I mean, sorry.
Yeah. Right.
It sounds like she's not necessarily being held. What was she going to court for? Something about probation for an adult? What was that about? Do you know?
She wrote a complaint because of the misconduct of adult probation.
Okay, but who, the adult probation, was she on probation?
She doesn't say. She doesn't specify.
Yeah, I don't understand, what her situation is at this point. I mean, if she's not being held by the courts right now, there's not much you could do. We need to get justice at some point in time. I know Trump has spoken out over the weekend on Mother's Day and made mention, I'm going to have to totally paraphrase this. I don't remember the exact words, but the paraphrase, I think, is pretty close. But ultimately, his bottom line was that things are going to get better. And, how did he put it? Did you hear what he had to say this past weekend? Actually, I don't think necessarily he spoke it, but I believe he put it out on his website. But anyway,
Stacey. Who is that?
Huh?
Who is that?
Donald Trump on Sunday.
Oh.
He said that basically things are going to get better and for us not to worry. So that really kind of secures the thinking and the ideas we've had concerning the military and a lot of things that Q had been saying that's going to come to pass. But until that happens, until the military gets involved and just takes this, the enemies, both foreign and domestic, and takes them out of play, our courts are going to continue to just degrade worse and worse. You know, we're all in courts. I'm in court right now. As a matter of fact, I got a case coming up this week I got to attend to. It's a personal case, and it's in the federal courts, and I know what they're going to do. It's the same thing. They do the same thing over and over again. They just break their own rules. They break their own laws. They don't apply anything. Even the laws that they claim are law, they don't obey. So, you know, if someone is stuck in a situation where they can't get loose from a court, we could do a habeas corpus, but we've only had a few successes with that. We have indicted all of the judges that have failed to respond and to the habeas corpuses and to a lot of judges that failed to respond to these non-judicial foreclosures. So we have put indictments on them, and there's over 200 judges at this point that we have indicted. And we'll continue to indict, but we're not going to see any action on that either until we get rid of all of these criminals that are running our government in both the judicial and the legislative branch, and right now also in the administrative branch. You know, we have a puppet there, and it's a puppet government. So it's an oligarchy, and Biden is just doing what he's told to do. You know, it's a shame, but there's really not much anyone could do on this situation. They're just not going to obey the law. But this idea, I'm wondering whose idea or who said to take the DNA. I don't think she mentioned this in the question. I mean,
no, she said they did, but
it didn't. It didn't sound like it was a judge's order to do that, though. Did it?
No. They just said they did it to her.
Yeah, but who's they? See, there's so much in that question that I just don't understand.
I agree, and it's confusing for me also because this is all one sentence down to to where people were looking at her local business.
Yeah, but again, you know, if she's being held captive, you know, habeas corpus could be tried. And again, we've had success on a few of them, but generally speaking, we've done quite a few of them, and most of them they've been ignored. Because habeas corpus is no longer available in our court systems. They're just not going to acknowledge it. Even our juries, they're all stacked and controlled by judges and prosecutors, so they get their ham sandwich and they get their conviction at the end of the day. It's just a horror story getting stuck criminally into these courts. And, of course, most of the situations, it's all vindictive prosecution, all of it.
Agreed.
Anyway, there's not much we could do until we get to the other side, and hopefully getting to the other side means that these people finally end up in jail. We the people step up and we take our court systems back and our legislative system back, and the people control it. The people have to realize that a court of law is not to be controlled by the government. The government is not to control courts of law. They're only to control courts of equity. And even there, they're supposed to be obedient to American jurisprudence, which is common law. But they ignore all that because they've turned us over to civil law in 1938. It was the United States Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, that did this deed and turned us over into civil law and turned us into. And then, of course, when you look at the whole thing, this is all the bar is behind all of this, and they turned us into a democracy. From a republic, and a democracy is just one step away from an oligarchy, and at this point we are an oligarchy. All of the presidents, at least since the assassination of Kennedy, and before some of them, of course, but at least since the assassination of Kennedy, have been controlled. They're all puppets. Reagan, I think, tried to break away from it. And we do know that Trump was the only president since Kennedy that was able to break away from that. And I still do believe that Trump is in control, and it's just a matter of time. They're hanging themselves ultimately. We're giving them all the rope they need to hang themselves. So anyway, what's the next question?
The next question comes from...
And one other thing, you know, depending on the case, and again, I don't know what the case is, whether they're still in court, what's going on. If the case is still moving forward and she's still stuck in that court, again, there are two things. If it's criminal, definitely we could do a habeas corpus. And no matter what it is, we also could attach that case to our case against the United States Supreme Court, which means at some point in time we would expect to get justice in those cases. Occasionally, you might get a judge that fears the people, fears the law, and understands the corrupt system, and that they are breaking the law and guilty of treason. Then they might, through fear, do the right thing. But that's, unfortunately, these days are pretty rare. You know, 20 years ago it was bad, but it wasn't as bad as it is today. Today they are so bold, so bold. I mean, I'm in federal court, and again, this is going to be my third hearing in federal court on this case. And the last time I was in that court, I asked the judge, well, you know, apparently I don't know what jurisdiction we're in, so could you tell me what jurisdiction we're in? And she refused. The judge just outright refused. Three times I told her. I demanded that they tell me the jurisdiction, and three times she just said no. Plain blank, that's it. That's how sad and how bad our justice system is. But you know what? It's going to take the people to take this all back. I mean, that's what we're all about here at National Liberty Alliance, is trying to, you know, bring...
You went away, John.
...an education to the people so that they can have government by consent and understand the science of government by consent. And that takes time. That you have to become re-educated. And it's an exciting education, ultimately, because it's about liberty and our founding fathers and who we are as a people. It's very, very exciting and rewarding and empowering as you learn and understand the common law and the nation that we've been created from that common law. We are a common law republic, the only one. But they will tell you that we're a democracy, and they've been acting as if we're a democracy, and that's why we have the Democrats' process. You know, the Democrats are a democracy, and Republicans are for republic. But generally speaking, neither of them, in most cases anyway, don't even understand what their positions should be. It's all about corruption, unfortunately, at this point. And I think most of Congress is going to go to jail. They need to, because we have to end this. One way or another, we have to end this. And I think it's coming close. But here we are, and we still wait. Okay, next call. Next question.
Okay, my name is Carly, and I work in the media. I'm a member of the IBEW Union Local whatever number, and I am hired by several employers. Some of my employers are CBS Sports, Fox Sports, MJN Productions, PPI, and several others. I want to know how I can still work without being forced to be tested, have my temperature taken, and wear a mask. How does an employer have the right to do this to their employees? How can they refuse me work when I'm able to do the job?
Well, again, we all know and understand that this whole nation, ultimately the people who aren't paying attention particularly and really don't have no clue what's going on and don't understand this whole thing is just really fake, phony, and false. But people are panicking. I mean, I don't wear a mask anymore. I go into stores, and every once in a while you get people who actually panic. I mean, they get really upset and angry. You're wearing a mask. You're not wearing a mask, you know. You know, you're dealing with irrational people, and the employers are being irrational also. What I would do, well, again, you know, this could be a problem because you lose business, lose your job, or whatever the situation may be here, so that's a concern if you buck them. Personally, me, I'd buck them. I don't care. I wouldn't care, and I don't care. I just would buck them. Whatever I would lose, and that would be that. But, you know, it is tough. I'm not in that situation, so it is kind of easy for me to say that. But nevertheless, I do believe that's how I would feel and be. So I would buck them and just no, say no. We're not going to do this no more. Now, of course, right now you're not going to get anywhere, and you may lose your job or lose your contracts. Again, it sounded like they were in business or something. So that's a problem, but, you know, you can sue later in courts of justice once we get our courts of justice back, but then you have to survive from now until then. So everybody has to decide what they're going to do, you know. I do know whenever I go into a hospital or into a medical facility, they take my temperature, and, I just, big deal, let them take my temperature. I'm not going to make a big stink about that. But the mask thing is where I take my stand, you know. Any event, that's the best I can say. There's really not much you could do right now, but you can prepare lawsuits and do affidavits and get things ready for when we get onto the other side and then sue them all. If they're not in jail, because, you know, well, again, particularly the people that she mentioned, a lot of them may be in jail. But anyway.
I had an exchange this week where they said, the city had told the restaurant that they would lose their license to be a restaurant if I didn't put on a mask or wait outside.
Well, guess what? You know, these restaurants and these entrepreneurs particularly, you know, there are a lot of them that have a problem with this, but they're giving in because maybe they feel like they're standing alone. You know, if we had committees of safety in these counties, this would not be a problem because people would come together and say, we're not going to take it no more. We're all going to not do it and tell them to go to Hades and then just open up their businesses, do what they want to do and ignore the law. You know, if one or two or three businesses do that, you know, it can be very injurious to the individuals who are doing that. But if we come together as a whole and most of us do that, then we wouldn't have that problem. But it really has gotten out of hand. But it's all driven by fear. And that's what communists do. That's what Marxists do. They drive the whole process by fear. Their whole way of taking this nation back, and they'll get the people to do anything. Sit, stand, you know, beg, whatever. It doesn't matter. They will get the people to do anything as long as they can keep them in that state of fear. And that's why they don't want to let go of these masks, and they want to continue on with you know, given the vaccines, and which I'm convinced at this point, it sounds insane, but nevertheless, if you listen to the real experts out there, and there's plenty of them, even the one of the individuals that worked for some of these pharmaceutical companies was a president and a researcher, a vice president, I'm sorry, and the chief researcher, and also some other people who are big individuals in the industry, are saying that this vaccine is deadly and people are dying. You know, I also heard recently, and hopefully this is a true report, that half of the vaccines being given is placebo. And let us hope that that is the case, because I do believe it is a poison. I do believe people are dying, and I do believe a lot of these people are going to die within the next few years. their immune system are being destroyed. And it was explained on by a scientist on how this system works, and your immune system is being destroyed. So in any event, it's a bad situation. But this is how they're trying to move us into a communist state. This is how it's through a Marxism or communism, whichever one you want to call. And that's where we're heading. And the people need to step up. I heard someone recently say the military can't save us. And I agree with that woman that said that. The military can put this nation back together again. But it's up to the people to save themselves. The people have to stand up and step up and take control to have government by consent. And government by consent requires an education. It requires a re-education, an understanding of who we are as a people, what is a natural law republic, and how can we take control of our political process. We can take 100% control of our political process. But people don't know how to do that, and that's what we're trying to teach people. People can take 100% control of their courts, because that's what a common law court is. A common law court is of the people, run by the people, not by a judge. A magistrate is there to be obedient to the people in that courtroom that sit in that jury box. These people that sit in that jury box need to understand that they are the sovereigns of the court, that they represent the will of that court, which is ultimately the will of the law, which is the will of God, a just court. And they need to understand that they make the law. We, the people, ordained and established this constitution for them, and we gave them certain powers. And the legislators, we gave 18 powers, particularly to write law and to execute certain powers, which, again, there were 17 powers plus the power to write law concerning those 17 powers. So it's 18 powers.
I'd like to reinforce one of your points when you get a chance.
Right. And so they are to, we the people are to make the law. In other words, when we go into a court of law, we decide innocent or guilt. We decide, what restitution needs to be paid or put forward in that particular court. How do we restore the injured party? We, the people, decide on whether someone needs to go to jail or not and how long they should go to jail for. Not a judge. Common law just does not permit that. It's against the whole nature of what common law is. The common law is all about 12 individuals listening to what's going on and making a judgment. And if you got 12 people who have been liberated from control of a government or any of their legislative codes and statutes, then they will decide the just thing. And that's what we need to really return to. And if we don't return to, then this nation's done. Our government will be as just and as honest as our courts are. And right now, there's nothing but snakes in our courts. They're venomous. These judges, this is totally out of control with no justice in mind or heart. And I don't even know how they go to sleep at night. But in any event, so our government is totally corrupt. Look at Congress. Look at the insanity. The insanity. You know, I was listening. I'm trying to think of the congressman's name. He's from, matter of fact, he holds two. He's a Canadian and also an American. What's the guy's name? He's a Republican.
Yeah, Cruz.
I heard Cruz just. It was yesterday. Today I heard. I think it was yesterday. Whenever he spoke it, I don't know, but it was the last day or two. And he was talking about, he brought up issues in the Congress that, hey, you know, all this money that's going out, they were going to send it out to everybody, no matter what, illegal aliens and also to people who are in jail. And he tried to convince Congress, hey, let's get a vote up here. Let's not give these money to the people. If they're in jail, what are we going to give them money for? But Congress went that way. They had given money to the people in jail. They're giving it to illegal aliens and so on. So that shows us how unjust our government is, how seriously defunct it is. And look at Biden. He's just destroying the economy. He's destroying everything. He's got the borders reopened. He's just people coming in like crazy. He shut down, you know, the gas lines, the oil lines coming down from up north. It's just creating a lot of problems, a lot of problems. And, of course, the people aren't hearing this truth. I mean, we hear about it through alternative news, but if you listen to the mainstream media, you don't hear what's really going on. But go ahead, you wanted to
I wanted to say that I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was Jefferson, it might have been Franklin. But they said the only people that can survive in this country are educated people, the people who knew the Bible, knew common law. And, you know, since the Rules Enabling Act, it's been about 83 years since the first rules of civil procedure were instituted. And it's been a gradual process occurring over an 80-year span. Well, that's a very long time. And we've gotten so far away. The final arbiter of the Constitution isn't the Supreme Court. It's you, me, and everybody here. And the sooner we learn that, and the sooner we get together and discuss it and teach ourselves and teach others, the sooner we can take back this country. Some are already doing it. I heard about some place in Dallas that just told the school board, get up and leave. And they got up and left, and they voted a new school
board.
That's
what the people have to do. That's what the people have to do. We've got to come together in committees of safety within our county and figure out what we're going to do first to start fixing problems and start taking control of the political process through the committeemen, take control of the courts through the process that we're setting up with the jury administrators and become educated and understand what's going on. Take control and restructure the militia from the ground up and just take control of everything.
And after 80 years, there is no executive authority, i.e. sheriffs or anybody in executive branch, who understands and that this is what needs to happen. They're so encased after 80 years and this thought that they've all figured it out and they know what is best and they know how this whole thing works. And until we get a sheriff that stands up, I think we're going to have this problem. Okay, I got one more question and Brenda's here.
Well,
so.
Let me just say something about that. You know, the British Bar, they started around the 1600s, mid-1600s, I believe it was. I'm just looking into this now. And I want to try to put some things together to have a better understanding of this. But the British Bar ultimately worked, which was created by the Crown ultimately. I mean, the idea of the bar and civil law goes all the way back to Babylon. But that whole process was used in order to take control of Britain and to destroy common law in Britain. And Britain has almost lost their common law also. I mean, all those judges are as corrupt. Every once in a while they get a good thing going, but generally speaking, their common law is pretty much gone also. And of course, the Pope and the Crown back in 18... goodness, what year was that? 1818 or something like that, or 1816 or 17, somewhere around there. I think it was 1818, where they got together and decided that they were going to plunder the economic and political and judicial system of America. And actually, the king had been doing that before that, and the Pope probably was doing it also. They got together and started working together on this. But so they had a treaty to come together and put out letters of marque and to plunder America. But again, since 1776, they would determined to destroy America. And the British Bar was operating here in America within our courts in the mid-1700s. And so they've been destroying America from day one. Before we even were created, they were destroying what we had going here in the colonies. And again, the focus really got really hardcore after, of course, the Declaration of Independence in 1776. And eventually, of course, we had the American Bar Association, which is an extension of the bar anyway, because what it's doing is it's bringing over civil law. And it turned us into a democracy, which we are not. And this is all Bach controlled. You know, I'm looking into this right now. And we've written some papers on some of this stuff and put together some information concerning this. Matter of fact, let me see. We have it on. Hang on a second. Let me see if I can find this. Political issues. I think it's under political parties. Yeah, I think it's under here. I wrote an email a while back, a couple of weeks ago, called America is Dying, and we put this up on our page, America is Dying. And I think it was here where we laid out what took place. Yeah, in 1878, 75 esquires from 21 states and the District of Columbia met in Saratoga Springs, New York, in an act of high treason, established the American Bar Association. Since that first meeting, the ABA has worked in the shadows, infiltrating our government, our courts, our churches, our schools, our institutions, and our media. This was done in an effort to expunge our common law and replace it with civil law, also known as Babylonian law, Justinian law, or Roman law. And I'll tell you, I've talked with a lot of lawyers over the years, and most of them are convinced that they're taught in school that we are under Roman law. They think our nation was created and mimicked over as of Rome, okay? And nothing could be further from the truth. That is not true at all. But it goes on, and I was just reading today on some information on certain dates, you know, things taking place with the bar. But they have destroyed so much of who we are as a people. They've destroyed our structure of government. Congress, they can't get nothing done. It's controlled by just a couple of people. And Britain has the same problem because, again, you've got the bar attorneys doing this. And, of course, even just our schooling for our children, you know, we don't teach them civics, we don't teach them the Constitution, and they learn really Marxism, you know. And I heard a lot of people are starting to realize this since their kids are doing homeschooling, you know, they're doing school on the computers, which I wonder what happens with the children who don't have computers, you know, or can't afford them maybe or something. I guess that's possible, but in any event, I heard a lot of parents are starting to hear and realize what they're being taught in schools. I know my nephew, who just finished his last year, he's finishing up right now, and I've been kind of following a lot of his education going on in his schooling, and he's never had books. They don't give him books. He says they got some books, but they're in school. They're not allowed to take them home. So the parents don't have no clue on what they're being taught. And I've been in his school to pick him up early or something and saw some of the things going on in that school, demonstrations. I remember there was a shooting a couple of years back, and it was a big thing. And they had these kids in the school. They were demonstrating inside the school for gun control. This is what they're teaching our children, you know. Anyway,
yep.
Nothing but lies. And lawyers are the problem. And I'm not talking about lawyers per se, because there are a lot of lawyers that were not taught by the bar. They may have taken the bar exam in order to be able to practice, but they know the truth. They weren't necessarily taught by the bar. But most schools are bar-controlled. There's very few schools that are not bar-controlled. And, of course, there are some common law lawyers out there, people who have studied the common law, but they struggle. It's a struggle for them because... They're in a court system that is under civil law. And again, that took place through the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, and it took place in 1938, and it was the United States Supreme Court that put the stamp of approval on the rules of the court, which prior to that, the rules of the court were the rules of common law. But now they got these rules that they've written, and Rule 2 abrogates common law. Gone. And they explain that, right? As a matter of fact, you go onto the website, onto the United States Supreme Court's website, and you will see it's very clear that common law, they fuse together, equity and law, and it is called civil law, and that's where we're at. We are only to be under the law of God, the common law, the laws of nature's God. But that's not the case anymore. It's getting worse and worse as the years go by, worse and worse.
Next question?
People are seeing it. We have another question? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we have one more. It came in late, but I'm going to do it because it's up here. It's short. Hi, greetings. Do you know of any non-lawyer that ever won an unlicensed practice of law charges against them?
I know they've tried to stop me many times in courts, but you just really end up losing instead of being thrown out and not prevented and being prevented from speaking. I know they tried to do that when I was in court representing myself and my wife together, and they wanted me not to be able to represent my wife. I mean, these people are insane. But, I don't know per se, any details on that, so I don't know. But it is a struggle many places. They don't like you in the courts if you're not an attorney that's bar-approved or something. And again, it's very difficult for lawyers who are not bar-approved to sometimes be able to get into a court and to practice law sometimes.
And I'd like to add to all of this that...
And by the way, Brent will be up soon. I'm sure he can expound on this kind of thing more than I can, but go ahead.
Brent is here, and I just wanted to add that the American Bar Association was trying 30 years before the Rules Enabling Act to get something on the order of the Rules Enabling Act, and they held lots of hearings in Congress. Every session it would come up, and they would put something else. They would tweak
that. Just to add to what you're just saying there, we did research on this here in New York, and in 1911, they poured in all kinds of legislative statutes and codes here in New York. I don't know about the federal side of things, but they pushed a lot of things that were being applied towards the people or intended to be applied towards the people. But I think it took until about 1934. That was kind of the thing they had to do in order to execute it finally. But go ahead.
And I have one last thing I'd like to say. I came across the word abdicate, and the role that we as the people have is to be the final check on our government. And we have abdicated that role. And we can say, yes, we weren't taught. We can say, yes, we were cut out of. And over 80 years, all of those things are true. We were not taught. We were not allowed to say what we need to say. But we still had that responsibility.
Well, I think it was a lot that we didn't know what to say.
Exactly. We didn't know what to say. So to end that
abdication,
we have to learn, and we have to be able to go forward. We have to organize, and we have to do these things. It can't be just learning. It has to be doing, too. And there you go. Brent's here, and I'll turn it back over to you, and the questions are gone.
Okay. All right, is Gerard here?
Haven't checked on Gerard. I'm looking now.
Okay. All right, well, we'll move over to Brent, and let me know if Gerard's here.
No, I don't see Gerard.
Okay. All right, Brent, are you ready to take the mic for a while? Brent? Maybe you can unmute him. Maybe he didn't come in as a... Can you find him, Terry? Make sure he's unmuted.
I'm working on it. Yeah, he's unmuted.
Right.
He came in as a host.
Yes, I'm here, Terry.
Okay. All right, I'm going to pass things over to you, Brent, for a few. And this is Brent Winters, and he's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law and a few other books. And he's going to teach us something tonight. Go right ahead, Brent. I don't know if you want to comment on some of the things I was talking about, your perspective on people who are trying to practice law without a license and maybe being having a problem, or even lawyers who are not bar attorneys and trying to practice law. What's your experience on that? Go ahead.
Well, no, that's an important question, and it comes up often in the Patriot community, obviously, because people want to get shed of lawyers, because lawyers often charge a lot of money, and often, not always, but often, they deliver absolutely nothing, or they hurt you. And I've seen that more often than not. But I say also, and I say rightly, that a good lawyer is like a good doctor, or a good butcher, baker, or candlestick maker. They're often in the way. They're like a spare tire. They're often in the way until you need them. Now, when you need a surgeon, you need a surgeon. That's it. It's too late to do anything else. That's what you got to have. That's what you got to have. And lawyers are best suited for that kind of a situation. They're best suited for a last resort. Now, don't be calling them unless you don't have any other choice, and they're going to throw you in the coffin and nail the lid down. And when you're in that position, you're better off to get one if you're going to lose your liberty, your life, your property, or a combination thereof, and look around and try to find a good one. I've been in that position, and I'm glad that I did that. I got a lawyer. Fortunately, it turned out okay, but it is important that you not represent yourself if you're facing some serious loss. And just like it's important that you get a surgeon, as crooked as they are, as dependent upon the government as they are, as much money as they take, as rude as they are, etc., etc. If you got a good surgeon when you have to have one, you're better off. If you got a tumor, I just talked to a fellow, friend. He had a growth on a gland, not the pituitary. There's another one in there, one of you folk that study such things and know which one it is. And it was putting pressure on a nerve that took away his sight. I mean, just took it away. And he was an active fellow, a little older than me, not much, worked refurbishing cars. Well, that was pretty traumatic. They got a surgeon. They went into his nose. They cut a hole in there. And then they went down to his leg, took some fat off his leg where they could find some, and they put it in that hole they made in his sinus cavity to get to that gland to operate on it, and that fat, they've learned how to do that apparently, that fat then kind of adheres and grows back there and blocks that off again, and he's got his eyes back, and he'll be up and running in 2 weeks and back to work. I don't imagine he ever really probably spoke to the surgeon that much. I'm just making the point that's the way lawyers are. Now, the situation you were talking about, John, fascinating, about going into court and wanting to represent your wife. I've had people call me really desperate over their children being in court, and their children are minor, and they want to go in and help them, and the judge says, no, you can't say anything, and on it goes. Now, as far as the judge doing that in those cases, if the judge doesn't do that, the judge will probably lose his job, because it's against the law for anyone to represent someone before the court who's not licensed to speak on behalf of another. That's true in every state jurisdiction. It's true in every federal jurisdiction. And it's been true since before the beginning of America, going clear back to the 14th century and before even. And the licensing of lawyers to practice before the common law courts occurred because the Normans, who were Norwegians, who lived on the coast of France for about 165 years, invaded England. And William the First was the name of the man that was in charge, and he wanted to sit on the throne, and he invaded on the south of the island down there on the 14th of October, the year 1066, and after a long, hard battle, the defenders held the field, and a bow shot at a venture. Some kid took a bow and with an arrow, they had bought out arrows, the Norwegians, the Normans as they call them, and he just kind of pointed it up about a 45 degree angle and let her fly. And by the strangest of circumstances, the arrow hit the eye socket of the King of England, who was on the other side, and killed him. And when they found out that he was dead and the news of it rippled through the lines, they lost heart. It was evening. And the invaders made one last desperate attack and won. And the descendants of that man, William, have sat on the throne of England ever since. Elizabeth is a descendant of William the First. And when that happened, though, they brought with them what they'd picked up on the coast of France. Two things. The French tongue, and the Roman law, and William William started setting things up, and he appointed Roman priests to judgeships. He said the common law is in force, but then he appointed Roman priests that were Normans from France into the bench, and that created a struggle that's been going on ever since, and America's here because of that struggle. Struggle against the law of the land, our common law, and the law of the city. Well, the priests who controlled the courts, and they're supposed to be trying to use common law principles, which are due process, they used them, but they were deeply affected, of course, by who they were. And a Roman priest is a lawyer of the law of the city, the civil and canon laws of Rome. That's what he is. That's why he goes to school from anywhere from 7, even yet today, from 7 to 20 years, depending upon the level of education. But in any case, it's a long time to become a priest. And they're highly, efficiently educated. They're miseducated in the wrong thing. That's the problem. The law of the city. And they overtook the courts, and the common lawyers, there were a lot of people in Anglo-Saxons in England that couldn't get a hearing in the courts because they couldn't speak that bastardized Norman French. They no way. So the Anglo-Saxons were shut out. There were only about 1% or less of the population was Norman. Probably less than that. They controlled everything. They were the only ones that got into the courts because they spoke the language that ran the courts. Nobody else could get in. Well, they developed a group of men. They got together and said, well, shucks, there are a few of us can speak French and Norman French and English. And if we can go into court and present the case of a widow or a child who doesn't have any parents or he was supposed to get the inheritance, and they're trying to take it away from him. And the Roman Church was deeply involved in taking inheritances at that time. That's why those Roman priests were in office, was to control inheritance by their laws and get things funneled into their pockets. And, of course, the Pope was real big on that, and he thought he had England now under his control. Matter of fact, William promised the Pope. The Pope said, I'll back you when you invade England. But you got to make it a fiefdom of mine. You got my fiefdom. And by the time of Henry VIII, almost half the land, all the land in England, the Pope of Rome owned. And that was the shift of the Reformation that occurred when he took all that land back. But in the meantime, this class of men developed who wanted to help. They were Anglo-Saxons. They wanted to help people. And they knew the French tongue and the Anglo-Saxon tongue, English. And they went into court and did that. And then they said, listen, these Roman priests are perverting our common law. What are we going to do? And we can't get into the universities. They're all university trained. They're university trained lawyers. The universities are the creatures of Rome. And this is the struggle, you see. And it's been going on ever since. The law of the land, the canon civil laws of the Roman Empire through the Roman Church, in this case, and the law of the city. And the Roman Empire conquered, you see, militarily for centuries. And from that time on, now it's been through the ghost of Rome. Still there, conquering nations and people. Any way to do it, they'll do it. Well, what happened was then they said, we can't get into the universities, so we'll form our own schools, to train common lawyers. You know, there are only two kind of lawyers in the world. There are in the civil law countries, the law of the city, they call them civilians. That's where that word comes from, by the way. A civilian in France or South America, everybody knows what a civilian is. That's a lawyer. A lawyer of the civil laws of Rome, because they're all under the Code of Justinian. Well, the counterpart to a civilian is a commoner. That old word commoner was originally applied to lawyers, who were common law lawyers, commoners for short. There were civilians and commoners, and there are still today only civilians and commoners. That's all there is. Commoner is short for common lawyer, a lawyer of the common law. Civilian is short for lawyers of the civil and canon laws of Rome. And when you go to get a degree in the universities in South America, for instance, you'll get a degree. If you want to be a lawyer, it'll be called a degree in the civil canon laws of Rome. The law of the city. Well, they formed these schools, these training places called Inns of Court. Inns of Court. They're still there. There are four in England. At the founding of our country, there were about 100 men in America, in the colonies, that were graduates of the Inns of Court. And they were very foundational in what happened here, in ensuring that the common law continued in America. Now, we went to war with England for one reason. One reason. Because England said the common law does not apply in our American plantations. Well, that's a fancy French word, plantation, for colony. Colony. The French, very big, still in our law. The word petition is a Norman French word, petition. It's right in our Constitution. That's part of the bastardized Norman French. We call it law French, which still prevails in our courts in many ways. A lot of those words, people think they're Latin words. Most of them, well, being French, they're Latin-based, but they're still, they're French words. Those fancy words you see once in a while in legal documents. And that's because of the influence of the French-speaking Normans that invaded England. Well, it wasn't then, and Anglo-Saxon wasn't spoken even in Parliament until almost the 1400s. That was a big shift. They controlled everything. Well, they started these Inns of Court. There are four of them in England yet today, and to be a lawyer in England, you don't go to Oxford and Cambridge. No, you go to the Inns of Court. They're the only ones that have the authority. Now, watch me close on this. This is why we have bar associations in America. It's an historic event. It's not a matter of logic. It's a matter of history. So these Inns of Court were the ones we said, we're gonna train men that are so good, we're going to do it in the private sector. This isn't government doing this. This is just people who saw the need to preserve the common law. So they formed these Inns of Court, and they became the counterpart to being a priest. And the men at the Inns of Court, they said, that's where the word common law came from. Before that, it was called the Laws of Edward Confessor, Edward the Confessor, the last Anglo-Saxon king of England, Edward. That was just before, not long before William came on the scene. And before that, it was called the Laws of King Alfred. And before that, the Anglo-Saxons and the Danes. The Danes were the Vikings. They called it the Volk Reicht, our common law, Volk. Volk is our word folk, F-O-L-K, and Reicht is our word right, R-I-G-H-T. And the Germanic, old Anglo word of the Saxons, Volk Reicht, translates the people's duty. The people's duty, Volk Reicht. Well, what's the people's duty? Government. And the Volk Reicht had two responsibilities, jury duty, as defense of the law of the land, domestically, and armed defense. That's defense against enemies foreign. Enemies foreign, enemies domestic. That's where our oath of our Constitution comes from. Well, these Inns of Court, they said, the Roman priests that were running the courts said that the canon law of Rome, the canon civil laws, is the jus commune. Jus commune. That means the law common, the just. We get a word justice from that. The law common to all mankind. And Rome still says that today. The civil law, the canon law, the civil laws of Rome are the laws that are common to all mankind. That's a lie. It's the false law. It's the heretical law. It's the evil law, as Wycliffe called it, the evil men's law. And he was a Roman priest, by the way. They tried to burn him. He's the one that translated the Bible into English. They didn't get to him, so they dug him up and burned his bones instead. I suppose that satisfied them. But it is evil men's law. It is the law of the city. There is no right to remain silent. There is no right to keep and bear arms. There is no right of free speech. There is no right against unlawful searches and seizures. There is no separation of three branches of government. There is no jury, not in the civil law system of all the world. None of that. No, it's not there. Well, these Inns of Court begin to train men, and they begin to act like priests. You know, priests in the old days, they didn't ride horses, they only rode mules. Well, these guys said, we can beat fire with fire. We'll ride mules too. And then they begin to wear those funny-looking skull caps like the Roman priests did. They kind of fit tight on your head and look kind of weird. And they didn't get the tonsure. They didn't shave the crown of their head like the priest, but they did a lot of things like the priest. And they even said, jus commune is Latin for the common law. So that's, we said, no, no. We, I mean the Anglo-Saxon lawyers, they said, no, we have the common law. We're, our common law is the law for England, not the just commune, not the laws of the city. And so that's where the word common law came from. It came as in an imitation of the just commune, of the civil laws of Rome, because they claim that their law is the universal law for all mankind. They still claim that, of course. And we say, no, no. The just commune is the law that God approves of. It's from Him. It's the observations of the way things are in our surroundings, in nature, the way God made things, the relationships between men and men, and between things and men, and between things and things, is what govern. So we had these inns of court. And it got so that these inns of court began to train men. They'd come in there, men and boys, when they're about 14 years old. And it was a tough deal. You, at 14, all you did was read. You know, you've heard people talk about reading law, to learn law. Well, that's where that came from the ancient inns of court of old England. They read law. They read the common law cases, the cases. See, in the law of the city, there are no cases. No, just the statute, just the code of Justinian or the canon law of the church. There is no, no, you're forbidden by the strongest of tradition in those countries of even referring to the opinion of a judge. It's part of their understanding of reality. You don't do that. No, the code is perfect. You go back to the code. The code is perfect reason. It is the logos, as they said. So these inns of court took young men in, and over a period of many years, the training was rigorous. And it you went from a reader to a bencher. First, you just read for a couple, two, 3 years. You just read. That's all you did. And you lived there, by the way. There were dormitories there. You lived there, and you were under the strictest of disciplines. And then after you read law for a couple of years, then you became a bencher. That means you get to sit on the bench that was at the back of the courtroom, and you get to watch. You became a bencher. And then there was a couple more degrees. The whole thing about degrees in the university, that's a Babylonian idea. You know, like the Masons, you have so many degrees, or you go to a university, they give you degrees. That's all Babylonian. So they didn't have degrees, they just had benchers and readers, and then they had solicitors and barristers. There were different levels as you went up, but you lived right there, you were under strict discipline, just like it was almost like monkery, like being in a monastery. So they were trying to show the Romanists that they had more discipline than them. See, they wanted to beat them out. Well, eventually, of course, they did. They became powerful. And that, friends, neighbors, and kin, is where bar associations come from. You know, bar associations are private. The inns of court in England are still, to this very day, private. They have nothing to do with the government. But the government recognizes, the courts recognize, the historicity and the historic influence of the inns of court. And they're Gray's Inn. You can look them up on the internet. Gray's Inn, Lincoln's Inn are the two best known inns of court. There are four of them in England. And it was a private thing. Well, the bar associations in America, there were no inns of court here, and we depended. People say, oh, you take an oath to the Queen when you become a lawyer. None of that's true. None of that's true in America. I've taken several oaths about support and defend. Matter of fact, I've taken the oath six times to support and defend the Constitution. I've taken it six times. You don't need to take it six times. Once is enough. But even if you didn't take the oath doesn't change anything. The oath doesn't give you any new duty. No oath ever gives you a new duty. What does an oath do? An oath just strengthens a duty you already have. The oath strengthens a duty you already have. I mean, if you're born here, your parents are Americans, and you're born here on this soil. Soil is a synonym for land, by the way. If you're born here and you live here, that means God has bequeathed the enjoyment of this land to you. That means you have a duty to Him to not pollute it. To not pollute it. That means you do what He tells you to do. That's what that means. You don't do what He tells you to do, you've polluted the land just as surely as your grandfather, as surely as your grandfather, Adam, polluted that parcel of real estate God gave him. He polluted it. He didn't safeguard it. And God threw him out on his backside, threw him out and cursed the ground because of what happened. So here we are, trying to approximate, trying to aspirate, aspire toward God's standards on the land our Lord God has given us. Well, back to this whole thing about inns of court. So the inns of court were private, and they were antagonistic to the University of England, which was Oxford, and then Cambridge was formed, and they're still antagonistic to this day. The law of the land, our common law, was forbidden to be taught at Oxford or Cambridge. It never was taught. John Wycliffe said in the 1300s, we got to get the common law in the University of Oxford. He was a professor there, had been there for decades. And didn't happen. That was in about 1370, along in there, 1375. Nobody knows for sure, but that's what he demanded. It didn't happen. From 1375 to 1765, that's been almost 400 years. He demanded it, and almost 400 years later, William Blackstone delivered a series of lectures at Oxford. And he was commissioned by a wealthy Jewish merchant in England, endowed a chair at Oxford for him to teach, guess what? The law of the city. He was a common lawyer, a barrister. But he had been educated at Oxford, and then he went to the inns of court. He was educated in both. He made his choice for the common law, but they weren't going to let him teach the common law lecture. So this endower, this wealthy Jewish merchant by the name of Berner, commissioned him to teach, but he pulled a fast one. He said, well, the only way I can lecture on the law of the city, the canon laws of Rome, is if I compare and contrast it to the law of the land. And so he ended up lecturing on the law, comparing and contrasting the law of the land with the law of the city. And that became, that was put in print, and those became the four volumes of Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England that were quoted more often in our common law courts in America from the founding of our country, about the founding, because they were published in 1765, and then they began to publish them after that. But from that time, about the founding of our country, until about the year 1895, no other source was quoted in our course more often than the lectures of William Blackstone in four volumes. And those volumes, he was commissioned, given a lot of money, and made a lot of money selling those books to lecture on the law, the civil laws of England. And this book that John talks about, Excellence of the Common Law, It's a comparative law text. Doing what Blackstone did, only doing it in modern times, and it's approaching it a little different, a lot different. I've got 1,000 quotes from the Bible in that book, supported the points of view supported by Scripture. William Blackstone quoted the Bible in his volumes too, but he paraphrased more and didn't do it as much. But it's the same idea, to compare and contrast the law of the land and the law of the city. And Blackstone was right about this. You can't know the law of the land unless you compare it and contrast it with the law of the city. Because the law of the land is only enlivened in adversity. The law of the land is our common law, is only known. You can't even know it until there's an adversarial proceeding. The law of the city is not adversarial at all. It's inquisitorial. What does that mean? That means when they need information, they need a witness, they just tie him to a post and whip him to death, or they put him on the rack and put screws under his fingernails and get the information they want. Obviously, that's open to abuse. Well, there are other ways you can torture people. Deprivation of water, separation, deprivation from family for long periods of time. Confining a person to his home or to a jail, all sorts of things. Today they have what they call diesel therapy. You've heard of that. It's terrible. It's utterly terrible. That's torture. Of course, waterboarding comes up. Torture is not a part of the law of the land. The way we get information out of people and get information that may get the truth is through the adversarial process called the trial, battle by trial, cross-examination, confrontation of witnesses. That's what cross-examination is. Well, this thing about lawyers being licensed, oh, John, I started to say, you mentioned about you representing your wife, and I've had people talk to me, I want to represent my child, and they won't let me. Well, there's a way to get around that, and that's always been the rule, ever since the Inns of Court. There were no lawyers of the common law until the Inns of Court. In old Anglo-Saxon England, it didn't work that way. You didn't have that adversity, see. We've got that adversity now, and the bar associations in America are common lawyers. Originally, it started this way, and they aren't that old. I mean, they've only been around about 100 years. They got together and said, we want to preserve and promote our common law. They have been hijacked, and they don't do that anymore. I remember reading, and you can find this. If you get that book, Excellence of the Common Law, I've got a long section in there, all these things I'm saying. All these things I'm saying are written down in clearer presentation, more detail than what I'm saying now. But in that book, Excellence of the Common Law, by the way, the website's commonlawyer.com, I've got a story in there, possibly somewhat apocryphal, but it's I think it's probably substantially true. Abe Lincoln practiced law in Illinois, in the vast, vast prairie lands of Illinois. And he traveled from county to county, had an old mare, fat gray mare, and had saddlebags, and he'd kept his books and papers in those, and he'd throw the saddlebags up over her back and get in the saddle, and he'd go from county to county. And sometimes he'd hook her to a wagon, if he had one, he'd drive from county to county, and he would read books and study and as he was going. And, of course, stop and talk to people. And he covered, there are 102 counties in Illinois, and he probably covered most of them, downstate anyway, and got to know a lot of people. By the way, that's what gave him his political foundation for running for president, because he had to have a base, and his base became all the people he met traveling. He was on the road most of the time, of course. The other thing about that was he could get away from his wife. He didn't want to be around her. The greatest tragedy of his life was his wife, Mary. She was a piece of work. Well, that she was happy about that too, probably, but he was in an inn out in the middle of nowhere, sharing a bed with some other fellow he was traveling with, another lawyer. And this lawyer reported this story about him. They took their britches off and threw him up over the chair and got in bed, and he said that in the middle of the night, he heard somebody saying, this nation cannot survive half slave and half free. Again, this is his testimony. Who knows? And he saw the silhouette of this lanky man sitting up in bed saying that. He'd sitting straight up, and he said, this nation cannot survive. Well, he was in a place like that. It was on another night. And he was, in the evening, he was shaving, had the water pan out there on the little table, and they had a mirror, and he was trying to shave, and then before he went to bed that night, and some kid walks into his room, knocks on the door and walks in. He's a red-headed kid. Again, this is the story that was told by another fellow. I believe it was Herndon, his law partner, told this story. And Lincoln said, well, now, what do you need, son? And he spoke in a roguish kind of accent, this kid did. He said, I want to be a lawyer, and I've been trying to chase you down from county to county. I didn't know where you were, and I'm trying to chase you down. He said, well, what do you want me for? He said, well, the rules are, if you sign this piece of paper here that says I'm fit to practice law, then I can be a lawyer, and I'll get my license. He said, is that right? He said, yeah. And Lincoln was shaven. He said, what have you read? And this kid said, I have red hairs on the back of my neck. He said, no, no, no. He said, I mean, red, R-E-A-D. What have you read? He said, well, I've read Blackstone's commentaries. He said, okay. He said, got a piece of paper? He said, yeah. He said, I'll get a pencil just a minute. And he wrote on a piece of paper. He said, what's your name? He told him. He wrote it there. And then he wrote, this man is a good deal smarter than he looks, and I recommend him for the practice of law. And the kid took the note to the state Supreme Court in Springfield, and they gave him a license to practice law. That's how easy it used to be to practice law. Now, you still had to get a license. But no matter where it was, I'll end with this. I've been talking quite a while. I'll end with this. No matter where you go. Oh no, there's one other thing I want to mention. I want to talk about John's problem, how I licked that one time. But no matter where you were in America, throughout the history of America, there have been tough barriers to the practice of law. Now, even in that case, when that red-headed boy asked Lincoln to sign for him that he was good character, he could practice law, it's easy to get your license. It was easy in those days to get your license, but that didn't mean you could practice law. There's still another barrier. What is it? You had to know how to draw up the pleadings. And unless you could find a lawyer to teach you how to draw up pleadings in a way the court would accept them, you weren't going to practice law. You'd never help anybody. And Lincoln had a hard time finding somebody to help him, to show him how to draw up pleadings. He was educated. He never went to school but about a year when he was a little tiny boy. Finally ran into a fellow in Springfield when he was a young man. His name was Speed. His last name was Speed, and he taught him analytic geometry and had him reading books. And he got an education to some degree after he was grown, by the way, so don't be discouraged if you're not educated. Lincoln was grown before he knew anything, much about anything. He did read a lot, but he didn't have anybody to guide him. If there's nobody to discipline you to education, you'll not be educated. You'll learn a lot yourself, but you need a teacher. Everybody does. We all do. We need to discipline ourselves to subject ourselves to somebody else, even if we think he's wrong. We need to discipline ourselves to get an education, to subject ourselves, as in the old days, they used to call him a master. You know, the disciples of Jesus Christ were men that had never been to school. He just grabbed 12 men, like we impanel jurors today, grabbed 12 men, but he was with them for 3 years. They were with him every day, and he taught them, and they were called disciples. What does disciple mean? That's from the word discipline. They were disciplined to subject themselves to a master. Remember, he's the one that said, no student, no learner, no disciple is ever greater than his master. He won't know more than him. He might know what he knows. Oh, pick one that knows something, knows more than you, and see if you can learn something. Well, at any rate, when he got through with them, the people that were formerly educated saw that they had a boldness and a confidence that they themselves didn't have. And that's in the fourth chapter of Acts. You'll see it there. They saw that John and Peter were uneducated men. They were the unwashed masses, but they had confidence and boldness in their speech like they knew what they were talking about. Well, how do you get that? Well, you subject yourself to a teacher, and hopefully it's Jesus Christ himself, but in the meantime, Jesus Christ also has other men that he uses to teach us. Find one that is his blood is bibbling. Find one whose blood is bibbling and listen to him. Well, that's what Lincoln said. But if you didn't, now when Justice Joseph Story of the U.S. Supreme Court, he got his law license, it was relatively easy in those days in Massachusetts where he was from. That was in more recent times since our country has started. Well, about the time Abe Lincoln was ramming around in the wilderness out west there, the wild and woolly west that was at that time. He wrote a book. Justice Joseph Story he was just a young lawyer. He wrote a book that showed anybody that wanted to read it how to do the pleadings in court. And then back in that day, the Bar Association of Massachusetts got ticked at him because he opened up the practice of law, made it easier. And here's what happened when Justice Story did that. That book became popular, see? And people even out west that all they needed was a signature of a lawyer to get a license, but that didn't get you into the practice of law until you learned how to do the pleadings and you had to find somebody to show you, and there were no books written that said, well, Story wrote a book. All you had to do was read a book. And that's when the law schools then began to have influence. Well, if you've got a book, you could teach yourself somewhat, see? That helped. But now, for example, today, to practice law, if you get into Harvard, Yale, University of Minnesota, Stanford, all those big prestigious schools, if you get in there, that's the barrier is getting into the school. Because once you get in, getting out's easy. Getting in's hard. But there are other law schools it's easy to get into. You get into them easy. But getting out, and getting through is not easy. And then the bar exam, not easy. There have always been barriers to the practice of law that have been very, very high in common law countries, England, the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, primarily. The question is, at what point do these private bar associations, for instance, gain so much power and then the evil empire hijacks the power? Well, I think we're there. Clearly, the American Bar Association is off the rails. They're communist. They've been that way for a few decades. They've promoted, taken money for bar dues and promoted communist revolutions in places like Africa. State bar associations have gone that way too. Many, I shouldn't say all, I don't know about all of them, but many have. You don't, in some states, you don't have to belong to a bar association to practice law. It depends upon the laws of that state. But let me back up in this thing that John was saying. I was in court one time with my whole family. The evil empire made a go at us. And the way to get at somebody like me is try to get to their family. You got to get to the family, threaten the family, threaten the children, threaten to take the children away, threaten the mother, you're going to take the children away. On and on it goes. And when they do that, then people begin to buckle. That's their method of operation. Threat of force and force, ugliness, viciousness, lies, but threats. Well, I was in that situation and ended up going to court. So I couldn't represent my family because I was in a place where I didn't have a license to practice law. So what I did was, they were teenagers then. Some of them were young, some were older teenagers. I said, here's what we're going to do. You're all going to file your own pleadings. We're not going to file one pleading and everybody sign on to it. Because if we all file our own pleadings, that will make them have to fight on 7 or 8 different fronts. And they'll have to answer each pleading individually. Instead of me just writing a pleading, then everybody join the pleading. And that's what we did. We're great. I had a lawyer friend tell me, well, you're the man of the family. You're supposed to be taking charge of this situation. I said, I am. I got a plan. Oh, I see. I see what you're doing. Yeah. And it took a lot of writing, but it forced them to do a lot more work on the other side. Listen, when you go to court, don't expect to be treated kindly. And don't expect that the law will be followed. This is an adversarial tradition we live in. It's brutal in court. It's not brutal in court in France. Everybody just has to do what the judge says, no matter what, and everything will be okay. There's order. There's no screaming and hollering. There's no frustration. There's no cross-examination. There's no intimidation. There's no humiliation. It's just all very nice in the rest of the world. But in America, we go to court to fight. And I think that's one of the grand misunderstandings. See, we believe that the truth will not bob forth unless there's a fight with among people who have skin in the game and stand to lose life, liberty, property, or a combination thereof. And nothing hypothetical in court. No, it's a real case and controversy. Our Constitution says you can't even get into a federal court unless there's a real case and controversy. People really stand to lose something. Why? Because that sharpens your senses. Listen, if you go into a fight and you don't think there's something to lose and something to gain, you're not going to fight very hard. That's why when we fight battles, the powers that be want to work people up to a frenzy so they think that, well, that patriotism and all that stuff. They lie to them a lot of times. Oh, we're trying to save America. No, you're not. You're lying to people. Are there times when we needed to be pumped? Yes. But a lot of times it's just a lie. But the point I'm making is, if you don't think you stand to lose your family and your life, you're not going to fight very hard. There has to be a real case in controversy. That is not true in the rest of the world. In the rest of the world, the practice of law is like being a monk. It's like being in a monkery. It's like smelly candles and smelly bodies. And I was thinking today about the pole setters. The poles. In the early church, people got the crazy idea that they needed to separate themselves from the world in a way that it was ridiculous. And, of course, they started the monasteries. That was the way it started. To shut yourself out from the world, that's the way you serve God. Well, Jesus Christ said just the opposite. He said, separate yourself from the world, but mix it up with the world while you're doing that. Don't be a part of the world. That's the point. But it got so crazy that there were these men called pole setters.
and they would set on these tall poles. They would squat there for years, never get off. And people would, people thought they were holy, and they would come by and pray to them and then eat their droppings and pass food up to them. This is a true story. This is how crazy men are. Well, that was all part of the law of the city. That's the law of the city, and there is no adversity in a monastery. No, you just do what the guy in charge says, and there, he's in absolute dictatorial control, and that's the end of it. Well, that's not the way it is in court. In court, we go into court to fight, and we go in with authority of law, and we say, no, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, and we fight. It gets to the point people scream at one another, and they have to get the bailiff to slow things down. I've had the judge tell me, Mr. Winters, if you don't calm down, I'm going to have so-and-so over here deal with you. Well, I wasn't even getting that upset, frankly. Of course, you're saying now, yeah, I know, Brent, I'm listening to you now. Sounds to me like you're over-exercised. Well, if you don't get a little over-exercised for your client at some point, you don't know what's going on. Well, you don't want to get ugly. I understand that. But it doesn't hurt at the right point. At the right point to drive your point home. That's all I'm saying. Where our common law is an adversarial tradition. But no, if you go into court with your family and you want to defend them, if you're one of the plaintiffs or the defendants, that can be done. But there are more than one way to skin a cat. Well, I've talked enough and just left a lot of loose ends out there, I suppose. But Gerard, did Gerard show up? Gerard, are you there?
Yeah, I don't think he showed up yet.
It's John. Okay, back to you, John.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. And again, anybody wants to learn more about what Brent was saying, should purchase his book, Excellence of the Common Law. It gives you a good background on common law and the history thereof. Okay.
John, one other thing also, we're teaching a law class on Saturday afternoons. Go to commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. You can sign up there. Law class on trust law on Saturdays. It gives the time and the links on how to sign up. And with that, you get, if you sign up, you get a digital form, the Common Lawyer's Bible. A common lawyer translates and annotates the Bible from the original tongues with 15,000 footnotes. And we use that as a textbook. CommonLawyer.com. Thank you, John.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Okay, keep an eye out for Gerard, Terry, and if he comes in, let me know.
Will do.
Okay. All right, we'll take callers now. If anybody's got a question or a comment, star 6 to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. We'll take our first caller here, Dan from North Carolina. How you doing, Dan?
All right, you guys hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, very good. Well, that was a nice call there and nice comments by Mr. Brent Alan Winters. And, I'm wondering if you guys have the, it's the rendition by Mr. Scalia to document and validate is probably the better word, his take on about our Constitution. And I'm just wondering if you have, I'm missing, a friend of mine came to my office and I had the documents and after that I didn't have them anymore. I picked it up inadvertently and I'm needing these for my case that I have to deal with settling complex cases and stuff that I'm going to use.
You'd be able to buy that, find that by Googling it, you know. And usually, when I'm looking for a particular document, whatever it is I'm looking for, I write it, put it into the search bar, and then I'll put PDF after it, and usually you'll find your documents that way. I found many, many documents that way.
And one other, real quickly. There is probably no doubt somewhere within our National Liberty Alliance a fantastic array of documents.
I'm pretty sure we have Blackstone books also. I think there's mentioned three or four of them. I think there's four of them, if I recall. But But yeah, in any event, I'm pretty sure we have it on our website.
Yeah, I sent you back in time, you guys, about the Blackstone stuff, and you might already had something on it anyway, but it's it was, but anyway, nevertheless, the unified, let's see, unified, united grand jury documents, and I'm missing the page 9 of 10 and 10 of 10.
On which and, page? On which you talk about some of the papers that we wrote for by the
Unified. I'm pretty sure this is. Yes, sir.
Well, you could find that under the grand jury tab. Anybody looking on their browser, you can see me opening it up. But you go under grand jury, and you can come in action against the judiciary, and you can find a tremendous amount of information and papers that we have written on that page. So anyway, you can find a lot of stuff there. I don't know which document particularly you're looking for.
Yeah, and I will tell you that you did a fantastic job. It's about 29 pages, I remember, and it's a tremendous array of, pardon?
What was the focus?
On common law, the common law courts and stuff. And it came from, because you were the one at the end of it. Cliff, one of my colleagues down here, actually found it, and when he came across it, it showed you at the end of it in the National Liberty Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
About 29 pages.
Yeah, well, I've written so many, I don't know. I mean, just look at the page right here, and it's just a list and list and list of papers that we've written and then other things that we've attachments and stuff.
Yeah, and not to be too lengthy, in case there's some others there that's in the queue. Let's see, what was I going to say? The various... no question about it, documents. I believe what Jan has been trying to help me at some times and find the various information. And we need to try to get on the same wavelength. I won't go any further here. David's case is getting some tremendous pressure, and I don't go into it. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
At the Carolinas here. And so I tried to reach the other day, and
yeah, I think I returned your call, but then you know, I missed you.
Okay.
But and I've been really tied up the last this time.
All right, and one other thing, I left you a real nice message, you and Mr. John, and you asked me about 3 weeks ago or something, and I did what I think was a good public relations email. And it goes over to England. I won't say what it is, but I think you know what I'm talking about. And I wouldn't send it until I got you guys' approval. So
you're talking about the paper I wrote. Well, actually, I put it into an email. And
this was something that you were telling me that if I could get you a conference, you guys, the National Liberty Alliance, you know, founders and stuff, a conference with this group over in England.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know what I'm talking about. So anyway, I did write you what I called a cover letter and a nice, but I wouldn't send it, see, because I left it and sent it on up to you to get approval, and I've not heard anything back about it.
Yeah, well, it I guess it didn't get to me. Did you send it directly to me, or... You know, I get so
much. You and Mr. Chan, and I couldn't get a hold of Mr. Chan.
Try sending it again to me, and I'll keep an eye out for tomorrow.
Right. And real quickly, for benefit of everybody, how close are we for the book and stuff that you sent back, you know, and to the publishers, and the nice information you wrote up that you want us to eventually share with the sheriffs? You know, the sheriff's handbook.
Well, I had another meeting with my publisher today, as a matter of fact, and
right.
you know, we went through some approvals, and you know, and I told them, look, we got to get this book out there. I'm tired of, you know, I really got on their case quite a bit, and I said, I'm tired of just going through this from month to month to month. We got to get this book out. You know, they promised me, they put me on the fast pace. You know, when I first spoke with these people, they talk about people that take 2 years to get. I said, I'm not in it for 2 years. If we're going to work together, I need to get it out quickly. And they agreed that they would push it out within 6 months, but it's been well over 6 months. It's been almost a year now. And but, you know, I've sent them corrections, and then I had to send them more corrections. We went through some of them today, and I told them that, look, we got to get this done by the end of this week and move it into print. And they said that they were going to try to do that, but, again, you know, I have no control over it. You know, it goes to, and the thing, I think they sub a lot of this work out. I mean, I don't know that they have editors, for instance, that actually work for them. Maybe they do, but I don't think so. I think they sub that work out to different individuals as subcontractors, and then they'll get the, you know, the second correction or the third correction, and they just, you know, take forever. You know, I've been through my cover three times with these people, three times. And I said, you people aren't paying attention. I don't want what you're giving me. I want my cover. You know, they took my cover and they made it a little different this way. And it, to me, it was ugly. It was horrible. And I said, no, I want to get it in a very specific way. So finally, they got the cover right. So the cover's been approved and ready to go. And generally, most of the book, of course, it's been edited for quite some time, but there has been some problems in certain areas. And just waiting for them to confirm the correction that I sent them.
Well, real quickly, would you want us to send a certain, whatever you say that you think's going to be the asking price and covering the, you know, the shippage and all that? And are we close enough, you think, that you want us to maybe try to go ahead and send some funds in, like a money order? Or is it somehow that we can do it?
Are you talking about the purchase of the book?
Or can we do it by credit card?
Yeah, we do have a price.
Pardon?
We do have a price. They gave me a price.
Good.
And we've set it up on page. It's been up there for a while. Actually, we were very close, because at first we were charging 50, then we went to 48, and then finally they gave us a solid price, which was 44. $44 or $44.99. I think it was 44. And so we put it up there for $60, which includes shipping and handling. I mean, $50
is what we can send in.
No, $50.
$50, okay.
Right. I mean, if you go here onto the website here and you click on Government by Consent book right there, it'll take you to a page and it gives you the price, and it of course gives you a order form. You click on the order form. Anybody that's watching the browser, I'm doing it right now. And it's $50 a book. And also you can send your sheriff one. And if you fill that information and add additional $50 for your sheriff, then your sheriff will get a book. And if your sheriff is already getting one, then we'll pass that on to the county next door or whatever. You know, we want to get, every sheriff needs to get this. This has got to be an action by every sheriff. We have to educate every sheriff, just like we have to educate every person that wants to get involved here. You know, I did get a call from a person who had a large group, and I had a conversation with them, and they didn't seem to be interested in the educational part, and therefore they robbed their own people of this idea of the education. But they wanted me to explain to them and give them some information and details on how to get a grand jury going, and I refused to do it because, you know, ignorant people getting involved and not understanding what they're doing, it's only going to be damaging. You know, it'll become a star chamber, is what it becomes.
I agree.
So, I mean, we need education. We have to come and put forth the, you know, certain positions and ideas that we have to have. You know, we have to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. That's the key that we have to approach this with. And we have to learn what common law is. What exactly is common law? What's the difference between common law and equity, and that's what's in the Constitution, law and equity, which is common law and equity. And people don't know the difference of that. You know, a lot of what you find in the Black's dictionary, for instance, you know, you find all these different jurisdictions. None of that has anything to do with us. The only two jurisdictions that have anything to do with us, and it may really be just one, which is law itself. But our equity, and there's plenty of equity, of course, in blacks, but our equity is under American jurisprudence, which brings us back under common law again. But it's authoritative that we've given them the authority under Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution of what specifically they can get involved with. And therein is where the schooling needs to be, and the difference in the separations between the schooling. If a person is going to practice law, and they're going to practice in a law court, then they need to really focus and learn on common law. But even in Absolutely. Equity courts, they need to focus and learn on common law, because our equity, we are a natural law republic, and the only one in the world. We are the only natural law republic in the world. Even Britain is not. Let me think about that. Maybe originally when they began, but they're far from it. I mean, we're far from it too. So, but we still have our documents, and that's what can save us. And anybody who's violating that is a criminal, and they need to be arrested and tried for that. But equity courts, they're very specific. You go into the codes, U.S. codes, there's 57 codes, and one of them is blank, so it's actually 56, but there's 57 codes, and each one of those codes focuses in on a different agency or situation. It could be on commercial, it could be on a government agency. And what it is it's regulations and there's statutes. And of the 57 codes, only half of them is actual law. I mean, which is the rest of them, are regulations. But they refer to them as all statutes or regulations anyway. But so half of the 57 codes are actually established as law, and they have a jurisdiction. And that's the jurisdiction that they have to use those codes within. That's why when I went to court, and my last time I was in court on a case, which I'm going again this week, when I was in court, three times I asked the judge, what jurisdiction are we in? Because I don't recognize anything that's going on here. But what jurisdiction are we in? And she refused. I said, you're refusing to tell me what jurisdiction we're in? She said, yes. I couldn't believe that she even responded to that. She'd been better off just ignoring it, because this is definitely going to go through the appeals. And, she has committed a crime. She's committed felony rescue. we have a default. We have seven, eight people in the court all defaulted. It's amazing. And a U.S. attorney was handling a group of them, and some other attorney was handling another group. And they both attorneys defaulted. And she went through this whole thing, beating them up. You should have known better, you're a U.S. attorney. And then at the end, she forgave him and let him come back into the court. And I object. I said, what are you doing? How can he come back into the court? First of all, they got to prove that they have a case. First of all, they got to give a good damn good reason why they didn't respond in the first place. And he had no reason at all. He already spilt those beans before we even got to that point. And, I mean, the guy isn't very smart, I guess. But, and I said, the second thing, he's got to prove a case that they could possibly even win this case in order to get back to recover from a default. And recovering from a default is a very difficult thing to do. And so now I'm going for another one. I filed the letters for the default. I found a paper for the default. And after I filed the default, even a month or two later, all of a sudden now the lawyer comes in for this other group, and that's what we're going for. They want a hearing. I know what they're trying to do. They want to throw us out under Rule 12, saying that we don't have no case really to talk about, that we wouldn't clear. And I mean, we're clear as a bell exactly what the problems were and what the different charges are. But in any event, I know what they're going to do again. She's going to go through the whole thing and then forgive him again and bring him in. I mean, this is called felony rescue, no matter how you get about it. And so she's rescuing, and it becomes a conspiracy now, because the lawyer knows that they violated, they didn't make it in, and that she's violating the law to bring them back in, and that now becomes a conspiracy. But anyway, that's what
I've
we're
got. One,
against,
so I've got clear. One real quick question that you just jogged my memory. You told me not too long ago about this, too. And that is, I'm wondering if you guys in the website somewhere is so powerfully with a lot of unbelievable doctrines that you won't find anywhere else that you guys have, been able to collect and put together. You mentioned to me about an affidavit of default. Do you have, for the benefit of our talking, our audience?
We have an affidavit of default up on our website, an example. Okay. You can find it, let me go back over to here. Under education, you come down to court forms, processes, and instructions. Now, that is a page that possibly you may not see unless you're a premier member. And excuse me. And a premier member is someone who's giving us $5 a month or more. And so anybody who's a premier member has access to this page. But then yet it may not be. I don't recall. I know the one thing we did have as a premier member is to get into the government by consent course. Because we need money to survive and pay the bills and things.
Right.
And, we've given everything away for free, but it got to a point we had to get some kind of money in here. But anyway, we have a lot of things here. And in here, I'm pretty sure we have. Yeah, we have instructions on forms to challenge jurisdiction, instructions and forms to move your case for cause, instructions and forms to file a habeas corpus, move the court for enforcement, notice and demands. Now, in here, and we have a lot of memorandums you can use, landmark Supreme cases that really work, you can use in many, many of your cases. And I'm sure in here we do have, let me see where it might be. We're looking for a default, right? An affidavit of default. Here it is, under
right.
Instructions and forms, move your case for cause, and there's also an affidavit of default right there. And this will
right.
give you a good, it's just basically a framework for the default.
One real quick question. We've got people in the queue, so I have to respect that. The other thing, it's been a long, long time. It's probably been a couple of years ago, and that is document that walks you through from the start to finish having to do with filing a commercial lien. And in the process, if you remember, once someone fills that out, they have to send it in to their Secretary of State, where you would put an application.
You're talking about
in
after for, filing a commercial lien after you get a judgment or filing
No, it's let me see.
Look at it. I know people are practicing that kind of thing and doing those kind of things, and I learned a little bit
right.
about that. And but as I kept studying and looking more and more, I started to realize, and they would go after a lot of judges, for instance, with these liens. And as I, looked further and further into this, I come to realize, look at we're doing to them what they're doing to us, and that's unjust. We're trying to take something from them or get some kind of a judgment against them without giving them due process. You have to have due process before you can file
leave.
There are certain exceptions, and I'll tell you, I know there's an exception, for instance, as
right.
a contractor, as a general contractor, that was my main business that I was in most of my life. And, I've placed liens, but there's very, very specific rules on filing a lien and time schedule
but
you're going to file a lien because you have an investment into something. You have a contract usually, but you have materials on the site and maybe some work and labor into the site, and they're not paying you. But even that, they expire. I know here in New York, a contractor's lien is 8 months. Now you can renew that lien, months.
This, if you remember,
but one other
quick,
thing, wait. you can't really collect on it. Not to my knowledge, you can't anyway. It's really something that prevents them from moving forward. It causes problems with trying to get the money from banks and different things because you've got a lien placed on them. But the lien is pending. The lien is all about the process of pending eventually a hearing and due process in a court.
Sure. Real quickly, if you remember, my brother and I entered in, and it's registered in the registered deeds in Brunswick County. And real quickly, it's where that he failed to respond timely. So, and then
so that was a default.
Now my brother's and he's in default, and that would be. Okay, but, and so I've applied for but there, a there default is a very, judgment.
But it has to be a default of default. How do they put this? A default sure. I'm not sure of the exact words, but in other words, if someone defaults, the clerk can, if there's a sure conclusion of what you know, you particularly you'll find it in your, at the end of your document with wherefore clause, and you know, but you'll be very detailed on what you're looking for in the case, and if that is clear when you file it into the courts, and then they default, then the clerk can sign off on that fault upon your affidavit. Now, of course, if there's fraud in there, then the other side would file an affidavit concerning that fraud, and that could, of course, throw a wrench into it, and rightly so, it should. But you have to be very detailed on what it is that you're looking for, and the mathematics and everything has to be all spelled out very clearly in the document. Other than that, you still got to go back into the court and go through the process.
I'll tell you real quickly, and that is in the federal court in Wilmington, North Carolina, I noticed my brother's widow, because my brother had just recently passed. And so what was my brother's attorney while he was last living, and now it's widow, I noticed them to be before a probate judge in Brunswick County on a certain date, and those documents are definitely documented in what is called the PACER.org, which is the full accounting of everything in that. My brother filed a bankruptcy, Chapter 13, wage earner, and then shortly after that, sadly, he passed away. And so I noticed his attorney. And what now is still his widow's attorney, and they defaulted and were not in the probate to the probate case. So it's anyway. I appreciate what you're saying. We better sort of pass here and let some other people get on the the call.
And by the way, if you want to try to find those missing pages in a particular document, try looking at the date that's on that document. Or even there should be, on the top, there should be a title pretty much saying the name of the document. And between those two pieces of information, for instance, maybe it was, a show cause or a mandamus or something. And there would be a date, and you would find that on our page here, a way to find it. But with that,
thank
we'll
you very much. And I know there's a lot of people, what you were telling us a while ago, I know a lot of people will be really enjoying to be able to know that type of information is there, because it's going to be beneficial somewhere along the line.
Well, those papers are an education. It's an education. It was written to inform and to educate. So anybody who reads through those documents, you're going to really pull a lot out of it. And then if you read through a second time and even a third time and you're looking into the footnotes, it's an education. Okay, thanks
a lot. I hope our good buddy, Mr. Jan, I hope he's is having a good trip there. He worked so hard for the organization, and we love him so well. So we hope he will have a good trip and a good return back to his home office and as well.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Yes, sir. You too.
Okay. Our next caller, Jim from PA. You got the mic, Jim.
Yeah, Jim in Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Jim?
Yeah. Brent had stated that the Bar Association is private. Can NLA become a PMA, a private membership association?
Well, we... Not for the purposes that you're thinking, maybe, but here's the key thing. There's two sides to the court. There's court of law and a court of equity. Court of law is run by the people. You have 12 individuals who are supposed to, it's called the jury, and they're to make the decision on that case. And you have, of course, a magistrate, and all judges are magistrates, so a judge can sit in as the magistrate, but the magistrate has no power or authority really to make any major decisions, especially in the case of guilty or not guilty and the sentence and so on. That really, it's a people's court. That's the purpose of the jury. And so, you know, the people should be educated. If you're going to if you're going to represent someone, you should have a reasonable education. And of course, you know, there's a lot of ways you can get that, and you can even go to school to be a lawyer. But you want to stay away from the bar schools. But my opinion is any bar should be totally annihilated out of this country. We should get rid of them totally. The bar attorneys, if they want to continue practicing law, they got to get away from the bar. And then they have to be focused. Look, don't apply civil law to the people, because what they're doing is they're applying civil law. If you go into a federal court, they're applying code against you. Now, of course, you have contract courts, you know, where you can have an arbitrator, you can have a judge make the decision, and you have an appellate process through that, if that's the way you want to go. But if these people are not just individuals, that's the last thing you want to do, is have a judge make a decision on your case. But at least you have an appellate, an appeals process. And so, you know, you can go up the line. If you go to a jury trial, there is no appeal from that. You know, of course, there's an exception to every rule. But generally speaking, there is no appeal from the decision of a people's court. But I don't know why we would need an association if you, and again, I'm not sure what you're thinking of. When you say an association to deal with people, to train them to go into court and argue cases, if that's what you're talking about, or what? So maybe be a little clearer on that.
If I can clarify my question, it's to prevent anybody from infiltrating. You need to be accepted into the membership.
Infiltrating what? Our membership?
Our membership.
Well, I don't really worry too much about that. We have a good group of people on the national level who are very, very focused and concerned with anyone that tries to come. Look, when someone comes in to try to upset what we're doing, and believe me, we've had people, it doesn't take long before you realize that the person's a troublemaker and that they're really here to destroy what we're doing or to bring us into a different direction. And we've had that, and we've been blessed to be able to get past that. But we're not here really to be a major kind of an association. I mean, we are National Liberty Alliance, and we are an organization. It says .org, but we're not listed in any corporate way or anything of that nature. But our purpose is to educate, to facilitate an education for people to become educated and to communicate, you know, from one county to another or a state to another, and a place for people to come together and learn different things. So to organize, communicate, and to educate. Our purpose is really to get people on the grassroots level educated to step up on their own and take control of their government, have government by consent from the grassroots level. It's the only way we can take control of our government. It's got to be from the grassroots level. And if people develop and build the committees of safety and start working the processes as we're teaching them, you know, and they can add things to it, but generally speaking, you know, we want to take control of the political process so we get committee men to go into these positions and take control of, and the decision making on who gets into onto the ballot, and to recall these people who are breaking their oaths, okay? And that's the power and the authority of the committeemen. Right now, there is no elected committeemen that we have found anywhere in America. Not that they don't exist anywhere, because we haven't checked every state, but we haven't found them yet. The other thing is the same thing in the courts, to be able to have free and independent juries, fully informed, who understand their power and authority, that they are the lawmakers. At the end of the day, they make the decision. They apply and decide. They decide and apply the law. That's simple. What the restitution is, or what the conclusion of that case is, and that individual that is sitting in that case as a magistrate, even if they're a judge and they're sitting as a magistrate, they're only there to document things. Summary judgments are not permitted in common law, with very few exceptions. Okay, one exception particularly is a default. Okay. Then they have the authority to write a summary judgment on the conclusion of that affidavit of default from one side or the other. but they don't really have the decision-making, although they do. You know, I get sick to my stomach when I watch these TV programs or anything about courts, and I just saw something the other night, and the jury found a person guilty of something, and the judge decided, okay, and then he put forth, you know, what the punishment would be. You know, I mean, well, what business is that of his? You know, this is the people's courts, not his business. It's the people's business. They decide. People have to realize this. People have to become mature and come to understand this, to take control of the courts. This court belongs to us. They've locked us out. They prevent us from coming in. And you have a right to be able to have access to a court of justice. There should be no need to have an education, you know, or any kind of a license or anything to go in to make an argument on your own case. Now, maybe you can make a case by going people coming in and representing people. I mean, you can make a case that they should have some kind of qualifications. And, you know, if the people that are hiring these people aren't don't realize what kind of an education they have or don't have, well, maybe there needs to be something to protect that. But that's something we have to think about and talk about. Clearly, if you're going into an equity court, an individual has to be educated in equity. They have to be educated in the legislation. You know, and again, in the federal level, there are 57 different jurisdictions. Okay. On state levels, there are different jurisdictions too. Each state has their own legislation and authorities to control and make decisions and rule over government agencies and commercial activities. But they have no business deciding anything on We the People, and they certainly don't have any business deciding any case where a family is involved, especially when children are involved in that family. They have no business there whatsoever. That's the people's court. It belongs to the people. And but the whole world here is upside down. The bar has destroyed common law in this nation. It's almost, you can't find it. I mean, we can find it in our hearts and our minds and our education, but we're not finding them in our courts. They're just, it's shut out. They've been shut out. So.
Amen. Hey, John, I've asked you before, I've invited you before to speak at the Constitution Party National Meeting. And this fall, they're meeting in North Carolina or Florida. Would you be interested in speaking and making for me to make arrangements for you to speak at our meeting?
Well, I might come down to, you know, Carolinas. It's not too far from me. And, you know, Florida is a day's trip, but, you know, maybe. When are we talking?
We don't have a definite day yet, but it is this fall. You know, it's our fall meeting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's out there a little bit. Yeah. Why don't you talk to me in a month or two, and then I can make a decision.
I'll have more details for you. Yeah.
Right.
And one last question. Our Allegheny County committee, the Committee of Safety. I'm trying to think of the word that we have a de facto type of government now. We can't think of the right word, and Brent calls it the law of the city. Is there another word that we can call our government now other than de facto or law of the city? Is there another word?
Well, look, they believe they're under Roman law. The bar attorneys use that phrase all the time with me. They say, you know, we're under Roman law. And Roman, look at it, it's all synonymous. It's municipality law, Roman law, Justinian law, Babylonian law, civil law. It's all the same thing. It's just a different name. That's all, different brand to it, that's all. But it's all the same thing. It's all about control.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's all I had. I'll get back to you about that meeting in North Carolina.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Hi.
Okay, let us take our next caller, Ross from Oregon, is it?
Hello, this is Ross from Oregon.
Oregon?
Clackamas County.
Yep.
Clackamas County, Oregon.
Right. I think we spoke last week or the week before. Go ahead, Ross.
Yes. Can we restore the true title of our lands up underneath the
allodial titles?
Allodial
titles?
Yes.
Yes. Well, look, once we get to the other side, there can only be one way, allodial titles. Anything else is just a crime, you know. So, it has to go back. I mean, everything was under allodial titles in the beginning, And little by little, they did away with that through the process and create these titles that really, the people who think they own the property, when you look deep into the language, really are tenants. Just like going to England, they did that in England, they're tenants.
Yes, right now we are under what they call a color of title.
A what? Well, they have, well, it's a title, but what kind of title are you saying, other than the allodial?
A color.
Oh, color of title.
Yes.
Yeah, that's an interesting phrase to use with that, but I guess you can use that. Yeah, color of title.
It's
like under a color of law, which really is no law at all.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It has the appearance of the real title, so not a real title.
Yeah, it has an appearance of some authority or something. Again, it's a game they play, and they play with words, and you got to go down the rabbit hole a little bit to see what they're doing. I mean, to take the IRS case, just looking into the game that they play, if you go down their rabbit holes and you realize what the meaning of the, let's say they put a code against you, they have authority to do something against you under this code, or they're charging you with a criminal act under that code. Well, when you go down that rabbit hole looking into that code and you look for the interpretation of the phrases or words that they're using, you start to expound and express what really they're talking about, and you'll find it has nothing to do with we the people. I think that's one of the ways I won my case against the IRS. But the key thing, they were trying to shut me down and not speak, and throw me out with Rule 12 because they feared that. But one of the key things that I won my case with, I believe, was the fact that they didn't have any kind of proof of claim, which has to be in an affidavit form, and I'm back in with them again, and I'm suing them, and I explained to the judge, and the judge, just like she doesn't understand or she doesn't want to understand, and I told her, you can't make a claim. A government cannot make a claim without an affidavit, a proof of claim, and it has to be an affidavit form. And the IRS, very specifically, there's a form 56 and 4490. One of them is for for proof of claim, and the other one is for, fiduciary authority over your estate. And they don't have either of those things. Where did they receive such authority? Where did they receive the authority to go in and look at my bank accounts, or to look into the things I own, or to try to come in and freeze them and take them away without due process? Where did they get that authority? Okay. And how do you have a lien? How do you put a lien on without any kind of an affidavit? Okay? And even with that, the only affidavit of lien that could be done, to my knowledge, is a mechanics lien. Okay? How is it that the IRS seems to have mechanical lien abilities where they could just place a lien without going to court? I mean, where does that come from? They're lawless.
Yes, they are lawless.
Yeah.
Yeah, like my father said, he thinks that he owns the property.
Mm-hmm.
My stepdad.
Well, you know what? You go down. It's a battle. It's a battle. But you turn your property into private. Get away from residential, and if you're commercial, it's a different story. But it gets you down as residential, and that's the game they play with that particular word, residential. You go down and change your property. Say, I'm not residential. I'm private. This is private property. And it's a battle. You can make the change without having to go through the exercise of trying to lay out certain things about the property to turn it into an allodial property, which doesn't make sense to me. And I know people are doing that, people are teaching that, but I wouldn't bother going with that. I'd just go down and make it clear that this is private property. Then they have to take you off the tax rolls.
That's basically saying go to the county clerk's office.
Well, let me see. You'd start off in your town, really, because that's where they have it. The county is the real property that does the whole county. Every county has a real property office, and that's where you go to discover. You look into each one of these towns. All of the maps are broken up into towns, and then you can find the property and the owner the tax and the location, you know, the lot number, I mean, all that stuff. But you can also find that in the county, I mean, in the town. And it's in the town is where you have to make the change. And then they send that information to the county to make the change. But it is an uphill battle, but I've heard of people who've done it.
Yes, this is the, I think is where we live, we are not in the city boundaries at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to be in some town or city. There's got to be a town. What's your post office?
Oh, I live in Sandy, Oregon.
Okay, well, Sandy is what, a town?
Yeah, that's the town.
Okay,
Sandy.
So everybody lives in either a town Sandy. Or a, and even a village is inside of a town. So you either live in a town or a city.
Yeah.
You know?
Or a county.
Yeah.
Well, counties are made up of, like, for instance, my county, we have 19 towns and 2 cities. Okay, that makes up the whole county. Okay, so the county is not a town, though. You know, every town is within a county. Every city is within a county. You know, New York City, for instance, is broken up into 5 counties, 5 boroughs. They call them boroughs, but word boroughs really means county. And so there's 5 counties down in New York City, and each one of them is his own county, but that's how big the city is. But, you know, there's the Bronx, there's Brooklyn, Manhattan, and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, see, because when my dad started his own business to sell medical equipment, the city of Sandy told him, we are not in the city of Sandy's boundaries.
I didn't understand the last part. The city what?
Said to my dad, or stepdad, that we were not in the city boundaries.
Oh, you're not in the city. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
But you're in a town, though.
In the county.
But if you're not in a city, you got to be in a town. Okay. Counties are made of townships and cities.
John, out in the west, we have a piece of the city of Longmont that was never incorporated. They didn't want to be in the city of Longmont. They never became. And if you go outside the city of Longmont, you're in Boulder County. And that's how it is, because it doesn't go one to the other.
There's no town?
There are towns, but just if I cross the road over here, I'm not in Longmont anymore. I'm in Boulder County, and it's not incorporated.
Yeah, but, well, again, it doesn't have to be incorporated to be a town or a city, although pretty much every town and city almost has been incorporated. I don't think all of them have, but most of them have. And that, again, is a lawyer's game, and they've been working that out in order, again, to destroy us and tax us. You know, that the whole game, again, gets back in. It's corporatism. It's the
there are pieces of county that have not become towns or cities.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that, so I'd have to look to see, but I don't. I'm not aware of that. I guess I've been on the East Coast too much, too long, you know?
Yes.
Like all my life.
because West is totally different from the East.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I've never seen anyone's address without a postal mark that gives a town. Let me give you another example. You know, I'm in Hyde Park, and there are some people who live in Hyde Park, but it's off the fringes, and they actually have a Poughkeepsie address. So it goes through the Poughkeepsie post office. And the Poughkeepsie post office, I think they have 3 different post offices, so 3 different zips, if I recall. But anyway, they fall very close, so they've kind of let it over for that for their mail, but they're actually in Hyde Park. Okay. So if any time I've ever seen an address to anyone or anything, anywhere, it's always been, you know, some town or city and their states. And then those are
rural routes, and they have the post office is tasked under the Constitution with delivering the mail everywhere. So
if you're saying, but if you have a, what you're saying is you have a rural, Rural Road, okay, or rural, what did you call it, a rural route?
Rural route, yes.
Okay, so you have the name of the person, a rural route. What's on the third line?
Well, it has a city, but that's the name of the post office in that city. And they go out to the county. And
I understand. I wasn't aware of that, that there are
okay.
places like that.
Post
but route, that's interesting.
I'm familiar with it.
Okay, all right.
Oh, yeah. How do I upload the Oregon Constitution to the website?
How do you what?
Upload the state constitution up to the.
Oh, if you have, if you have your, anybody who wants to post the state constitution, we'd like to get them all. Just attach it to send it to mail mail at nationallibertyalliance.org and attach it to the mail in a PDF form. It's got to be in PDF form for your state constitution.
I think they do it in PDF form anyways.
Yeah, yeah, that's what most of them are. But we've had people who sent us links to them and not the PDF.
Oh.
So that it's just not helpful for us.
They didn't upload it, the document itself. They uploaded the link.
Yeah, well, we don't. We want the document itself for people to open up and download the PDF right off of our site. So that's what we'd want.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I would do that.
Okay.
It's the Oregon State Constitution. That's what they call it.
Okay. Yeah, send it to us at mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. So.
You want the original one? The original one or the updated version?
Well, if it's been updated, that's the one we would want. You know, so, you know, a lot of state constitutions are unconstitutional. not the whole constitution, but parts of it. You know, there are parts in New York constitution that's unlawful.
The part is that amended it to update it from.
Yeah. Well, all constitutions are to be read in light of the United States, the U.S. Constitution. And the key part to the U.S. Constitution, ultimately, is the Bill of Rights. Anybody who violates the Bill of Rights, which is part of our U.S. Constitution, of course, it's the capstone. But, you know, if you violate an unalienable right, or of course, the Bill of Rights is a list of a lot of unalienable rights, if you violate that in any way, and within the constitution of that state, then that part of that constitution is null and void. In theory, the whole constitution would be null and void in a sense. I mean, you could probably make a case with that because one part of your case is, unconstitutional or your position, the whole position is shot. It's gone.
You want also me upload the Declaration of Rights for Oregon?
Well, yeah. If you have I know in New York State Constitution, we have a bill inside, right? And it's not separate from the Constitution itself, but the bill is inside. Bill of Rights is inside the New York Constitution. But I guess if states have it, it's part of the Constitution. And again, you know, it's not so much that it's not part of the Constitution; it's the way it was written. For instance, in the case of our Constitution,
yeah.
The U.S. Constitution. It was lacking the Bill of Rights, and of course that was added later. You know, three years after our nation became a nation in 1789, and it was 1792 when the Bill of Rights was added. But that doesn't make it. It's still part of the document, and even though it's called the Ten Amendments or the Bill of Rights, it's still part of the Constitution. It's the capstone, really. As a matter of fact, our Constitution and all law is written in light of is understood and appreciated.
Does the 14th Amendment violate the Constitution?
So, anyway, we should take our next call. You got a final statement or comment or question?
I was saying, does the 14th Amendment violate the original Ten Amendments?
You know, I used to think so, but the more and more I look at it, again, you can interpret the 14th Amendment in two different ways when you look at it and read it. And if you can interpret it from the common law perspective, and it works, and you can interpret it from more of a from an equity side, and it could become a problem. So it's again gets back to a game of words. These people play with words. Let's take the word citizen for instance. If you talk to a lot of people, if you talk to a lot of people that are into the sovereign movement, whatever, there's many different forms out there with different groups, but and they don't like that word citizen, and I would never use the word citizen in the court because they'd interpret it in that perspective that they're thinking is I don't like that word because it makes me, a citizen takes away the personal part, me being one of the people. But the United States Constitution uses the word citizen at least 7 times.
Yes.
So our founding fathers used it and didn't have a problem with it, and I don't think this, being called a citizen puts us under civil law. You know, although they they try to make that claim it does, but, again, it's a game with words.
Yeah, it's how they use it.
Mm-hmm.
How the founding fathers use it compared to the civil law, how the civil law uses it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about usage of the word.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Some of them pollute it. So. Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Ross.
Bye.
Okay, let us get Kevin from New York. You got the mic, Kevin.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Yeah, John, it's me again. Same question.
I just answered your question.
We're just trying to find out how much longer it's going to be before we see the book.
Yeah, I know. I just answered your question earlier. I don't know if you're away from your computer because... Dan, first caller, brought that up at the end of his call concerning the book and so on. And again, I spoke with him today. I had a meeting today with him. So if you rewind, I spoke a little more on this already. So if you rewind a little bit after tonight is posted up there, you can hear the expounding on it. But basically, I had my meeting, and they're still sending me. I sent out a couple approvals today, and I sent out a couple of things for corrections to make sure that they got corrected, and they got to send that to me, showing me it's been corrected, and so I can sign off on it. So that's all it is. I think it's an editor thing. I really do not believe that the people working for this particular agency or whatever you want to, I guess an agency, they're working for these people. I think they sub out some work, and I think editors, I don't think they have editors actually employed directly. I think they're subcontracted. And I think that's where the problem is, because I can't get to talk directly with the editors. Because I told them, this is insane. We're going back and forth. You got a middle person on details. It's really dumb. It doesn't make sense. You know, I got to talk to the person who's actually editing it to get those corrections done and finished. You know, there's always a loss. When you got a middleman, there's a loss. Always.
Uh-huh. There's no new date on when it should be due, though, huh?
Well, I told them I want to get it done this week, and I really got onto their case hard. I said, we got to get this done this week. We got to get this book out, and I'd like to get this done by the end of the month. I want to get it to print right away. And they said, well, as soon as we get all the approval, I said, well, let's get the approvals done. You know, I've done all my work on my side. Let's get it done. So, anyway, I'm probably going to have another conversation in the next day or two from the way I left my conversation with them today. You know, I said within 24 hours we need to get on the phone again.
Okay, looking forward to it. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you. Okay.
Excuse me for a second.
Yeah.
My name is Barry. My name is Barry. I'm a friend of
how you doing?
My friend here. Good, good. I'm very interested in this, and we're looking to further this group in our own neighborhood. But just as a point of interest, there's a guy named Joshua Phillip, and he's part of the Epic Times.
Yeah, I know, you know Joshua. I don't know him personally, but I've been listening to him for quite some time. He's a great reporter. He's a great interviewer. He's one of the best.
Right. And he's on YouTube. Maybe you should reach out to him and explain some of the things that you've been through.
Well, he's on our list of trying to get an interview with him. We've got a number of people with large groups or large listenerships that we're trying to get interviewed by. And, you know, once we break into the system and get a couple of them going with some larger groups, then the other groups will start picking up, because there's always a connection from one to another, you know. They'll share us. As a matter of fact, we're going to be sending a copy of the books to many of these people, and we have him. Well, if we don't have him on the list, I'll make sure we do. I'm sure we do have Joshua on the list to receive a book. We're going to mail him one.
I think that would be highly effective. I mean, this guy is top
yes.
shelf, you know?
Yes, yes, he'll see it very quickly. Dave with X22 is another one. You know, we have Periscope, quite a few people on Periscope that really are really involved with a lot of things. And I hear every day, every time I listen, because I listen to about 5 or 6 different places, but I can't listen to them all every day because, you know, I got so much time, I got more work to do. But I listen to as much as I can, but constantly, every day, I hear from somebody, you know, we got to get out there to do something, but they don't know what to do. This is what we do, is to tell them what they can do.
What was this, Periscope.com?
Well, let me see what it's called. Hang on a second. It is American Media Periscope is one place. A Christian Patriot is another one I listen to. Before It's the News, X22 Report. Amazing Polly is good also. Epic Times, Patriot Soapbox. That's a lot of what I listen to. Once in a while, I listen to Steele. Robert David Steele.
What was the Christian? You said something about Christian?
Yeah, Christian Patriots.
Patriots.
Yeah. Let me see if exactly. I'll tell you in a second. Hang on a second. Let me get to it. News. Okay. This isn't necessarily the Christian one, but one is Before It's the News. I find a lot of good stuff there. Let's see, ChristianPatriots.org, and it's plural, Christian Patriots, so it's a plural, .org, and I don't know, do you listen to X22 Report?
I do. I was turned on to that a long time ago. Yeah.
Okay. Dave is pretty good. He's a little monotonous lady, lately. Anyway, because, you know, there's sort of not much news coming out, but right now it's starting to get active, okay? But for the past month or so, you know, he's been repeating himself a lot because I guess there's not much news out there. But this past weekend, and boy, there's a lot of stuff breaking, you know, a lot of stuff. So, and,
well,
and they're,
look,
all,
it's
they're
like,
all getting it out.
Yeah, it's like the fake news media. You know, what you need to do is you need to continually bombard the same message to get it out there. People will get used to it, and then they'll start saying to themselves, hey, listen, maybe I'll check this thing out. Let's see what it's all about.
Well, you know, another place to go listen, I really like this woman here. It's amazingpolly.net. Okay? She picks a subject and talks every day. And sometimes she's funny. She cracks you up. But she really gets a good message. You know, like how evil caught the world. She's got medical science journals exposed. Psychos control our society. Today there were demons. I mean, these are some of the titles of things. And she does some really good research and brings some really great stuff up. You know? Crimes against humanity, the people of the lie. That was really good, that particular episode, the people of the lie. But anyway, amazingpolly.net. Check her out. Click on her videos, and they're really good.
Is she on YouTube too? No.
Well, most of these people have been kicked off of YouTube. I don't think she's on YouTube anymore. She might be. But I don't think she is anymore. Matter of fact, I know she
even
is.
Even
the
Epic Times was they're basically censored. But
I know they bleep a lot of things so that they can get past the censorship stuff. But it's pretty
crazy.
Well, look, it's up to the people to step up and do something, because only the people can save our republic.
And someone was telling me that you went against Facebook.
Yeah, I won. As a matter of fact, Facebook defaulted. And I had the same judge on Facebook in the federal court as I got on my IRS case, which is one I initiated. They didn't initiate a case against me. I initiated a case against them. And same judge, same thing. I'm going to forgive him. Let him back in. She refuses to allow me. She keeps sending my default back. I keep sending it in. She keeps sending it back. So she's committing a crime every time she does that, because she's removing documents from the case. And
well, we have to get somehow.
Yeah, well, I think we've indicted her. I don't remember, but if we haven't, we will be, I'm sure. But you know, anybody who denies people due process and in a court of law, and again, look at they could make a summary judgment on a default. We don't need a jury to make a summary judgment. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, good. Keep up the good work.
All right. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else wants to get in the queue? We got about another 20 minutes or so. We got one person left in the queue. So if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. And the next person is, I don't know how to pronounce the name, Marcuti. I don't know. What's your name and state? I think it's Michigan, isn't it?
Yes. Jackie.
Jackie. Okay, well, it doesn't say Jackie, but how you doing, Jackie?
Good. I'm calling, I got a friend who is incarcerated and needing to do a writ of habeas corpus.
Uh-huh.
And my question is he's locked up in a state other than the state he wants the writ to go to. Can he still serve that to the jailer?
Well, we could do a writ of habeas corpus for him if he wants. He needs a next friend, someone to write the affidavit for them and give us the information in order to write the paperwork up. And then we'll do the serving. We'll work it out where you'll do the mailing, but we'll put our paperwork together and for the serving, and then you'll make sure they get it. And it comes from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And we've had some success, but most of, again, the courts are not acknowledging habeas corpuses. But once in a while, you get a judge who will acknowledge it. So if you want one to come from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, we'll do it for you. You could send your you can get a hold of us through intake@nationallibertyalliance.org, and you'll get a paper, a form, a list of information we'll need, and an affidavit, and we ask for a $100 donation, $100 or more. And then we'll get the paperwork together, and we were serving it directly ourselves, but that was getting more and more expensive because there's a process, it's more than one step. It's usually a three-step process. And so what we've been doing is mailing it out to the individual. So if you were the next friend who would write the affidavit for the person that's in custody, then you would fill out the form, get the affidavit, fill that out, get it to intake. And then once we get all the paperwork together, we'd send it to you, and then you would have it served. And you could serve it through the mail, through certified, or however you want to serve it. But you personally wouldn't be able to serve. You can have someone else serve it, but you personally couldn't serve it because you'd be part of the case by being the next friend and writing the papers. But,
right.
A friend or a spouse or someone can do it.
Okay. So I guess my next question would be, he is concerned about time because he's got an extradition trial June 2nd to be sent to the charging state.
What kind of charges they got against him? What kind of a court?
It's a criminal court. It's 8 felonies. He's been fighting it for 2 years now on his own. We had the jury trial, and he never went to sentencing due to COVID starting. Mm-hmm. So he got...
Well, if you want us to assist you with it, you send a request to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org, and then you'll get a form and fill out the form, and we'll work it from there. And Jim will give you instructions.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, let us take our next caller, Tia. What state you're from, Tia? T-I-A?
Hello. Hi, I'm calling from California. I did use your the form for the motion to show cause, and I did complete the steps, you know, all three of the steps, and had it filed on all parties. The problem is that I had court today. It was supposed to be they're calling it a 6-month review hearing. I did inform the judge that there was jurisdiction being challenged. And this bar attorney who was appointed to me without my consent, I haven't waived any rights or anything like that, insists that he's still representing me. The judge ended up having a closed meeting with me and that attorney where I told her, he's not my attorney. I'm here making a special appearance on behalf of my child.
This is a case where they're trying to take your child away?
The judge is trying to say that they've already established jurisdiction. Here's the thing is that there was a notice of appeal filed, right? But the judge is saying that the time to appeal is already passed. They're basically detaining my child with no reason being told to me. The whole thing is just corruption. And I'm just...
What is this, a family court?
They're calling it juvenile court. The thing is
that's unlawful. You're right. They don't have jurisdiction over you.
Contacted transcripts and records, and they emailed me back in writing saying that the time that we had court on January 12th, that department was not on file. The court was dark that day, and there was no calendars on, no hearings on record. And when I asked the judge about it, she said that wasn't true. I don't know. This is just really...
Well, you challenged the jurisdiction, right?
Yeah, but she's saying that they've already established jurisdiction.
Well, No. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be proven. It must be heard. And because that judge is biased, that judge already believes they have jurisdiction. You got to move to the next court up.
I said, is this a court of law or a court of justice? And she said a court of law. And I did bring up the bias,
it's not a court of law. It's not a court of justice either. Look, it's an administrative process, really. And matter of fact, its jurisdiction's unknown. Who knows what the jurisdiction is on this? Because they just make it up as they go, and everybody gets
to force me into mediation. They told that my son's appointed attorney told him that they're not going to be able to do anything until I talk to the social worker. But we've already had four that have lied, and they've withheld information.
These are very difficult cases with the children, and the most corrupt courts in the United States, in my opinion, is the family courts, the juvenile courts, or whatever kind of courts you want to talk about. Dealing with family, probate courts. All of these courts are the most corrupt. They're the most damaging. They're the most evil. There's no rules, laws, codes, anything. I mean, they just do whatever they please. And then everybody comes in with a lawyer. You get nothing done. You go months and months and months and nothing gets done. And especially if your children aren't still with you, that's a real problem because now they're...
My child's with my parent, which kind of makes it difficult because I can't get my parent to understand that they don't have any jurisdiction. And I'm not going to argue with my mother, over it. My child, in a...
There is a process. I mean, it's an uphill battle, and we're not going to... When we get to the other side, I'm going to be on a mission. Hopefully there'll be a lot of people working across the nation together, because hopefully we'll get enough of the committees of safety going and people involved in the judicial process in every county. And then collectively we need to work. We have to go on a mission to get rid of family courts. Family courts, when you take a bar attorney and make them a judge and set them up to make a decision on a family, and then every person, every child in the court has an attorney, then they want every parent to have an attorney. You got 6, 12, whatever attorneys in the courtroom. I mean, nothing gets done, and everything is a bunch of BS. It's all about this whatever rule they got here and every statute they got there.
They write it down so specifically.
And it's destructive. They're not there to fix the problem.
No, they're not. And it even says use these third-party agencies to create a narrative to support the one you already have.
And it's a money machine.
Shall be tried in court. It's ridiculous.
It's a money machine, too. You know, they require you to pay through a certain process, and if you don't pay, you know, I know somebody who was paying off, you know, to his wife and paid her directly, okay? And they still, I don't know whether he actually went to jail on this or not, but they were trying to put him in jail for not paying when he did pay, and he proved he paid it. Well, he didn't send it to us to get to her, you know? Why? Because, you see, there's a matching money coming through on the state or whatever level, some other level, probably the state level.
Well, especially with my son, when his situation, they're getting double the amount because, you know, he has a special need right now, and so it's just ridiculous, you know? So now instead of 25 people getting paid, we have that 75 profiting off of. Mm-hmm. You know, his trauma that he just went through.
Okay. Yeah. Well, look, bear in mind, you need to learn more because when you have to understand how to respond back to these people. Not that they're going to listen and not that they're going to respond back the way you want them, but you'll stick them sometimes because, you know, and again, you have to have, you know, they like precedence. So, you know, you use U.S. Supreme Court rulings on different things and you apply that to them. Look at once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. Clear as a bell. There's nothing to talk about. So I've challenged jurisdiction. You go in, you challenge jurisdiction. The judge says, well, I got jurisdiction. I decided. So, well, it hasn't been heard. You know, it has to be, once it's challenged, it has to be heard. A, number one, you know, the prosecutor or the other person on the other side, they didn't make a case. I was the only one who made a case, and I did it by affidavit form. And an affidavit unrebutted rules the court. You have to rule my way. That's number one. Number two, because I proved I laid out on how it is that they don't have jurisdiction. And number two, you're biased already. You already believe you got jurisdiction, so you can't decide. We got to move to the next court. You know, if you're in a town court, you move up to ultimately the county or the state court. You know, and I wouldn't even move to the county court. That's as worthless as, in my opinion, here in New York anyway, it's as worthless as the town courts and the village courts. I mean, they're just real a bunch of morons.
Right. Yeah, so. It's no different over here.
Yeah. So. All right, anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take our last caller, I think. Ross, back again from Oregon. You go ahead, Ross.
Oh, hello, I had a benefits planning meeting with my benefits counselor, and she mentioned about statutory blindness exemption for paying taxes.
Statutory what? Whoa. I missed that. She talked about statutory what?
Blindness.
Blindness? Blindless?
Yes.
Okay.
I have vision problems.
Okay.
I don't want to take that statutory blindness because it means another way of the government controlling me as disability through a statutory means of exemption.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want. It's about paying. It exempts me not have to pay taxes.
You don't have to pay taxes?
Yes, that's what a statutory blindness definition is.
Okay.
To exempt me from paying taxes.
Okay, so yeah, I wasn't familiar with that.
It's probably a disability statute for the United States government.
Mm-hmm.
So I never known about it until she mentioned it. So I don't want a statutory.
And are they trying to force it upon you anyway?
No, I haven't accepted, so the advisement is a wise idea.
Mm-hmm. All right,
but
well, is there...
It's forcing me to agree with them.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, is there a question in here for me,
How I do it through non-statutory means of getting not... paying taxes through my job.
And you don't want it because that makes a disability for you? And you don't want that label? And you don't want the label?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't want a label.
Okay. No, I understand that. I appreciate that because they do play games with that. So, but are they giving you a hard time forcing it upon you, or you have that liberty to say, no, I don't want it, and move on?
Yes, I were the common law route of not paying the statutory taxes. Because that's what the IRS is statutory taxation.
Well, look, the IRS is just a criminal organization. It's not even a true government agency. It's never had any proper, first of all, there is no authority for an IRS. And and it never, Congress didn't, work anything in to even create it. They just created themselves and was found that there, I don't know, there's a paper out there. I'm trying to think of the name of the paper, a Cooper file is what it is. And I think Cooper was the person who received it. And it was a file, sent the file from the IRS office, sent some kind of a file to them, and it revealed that the IRS just appeared among the federal agencies. I think it was in 1972 or 71 or somewhere around there. It was never created by any power or authority. They didn't have the authority to create it anyway. But an agency that just all of a sudden appeared. And it's very powerful.
Yes. I think it's when they created the Federal Reserve Act when it appeared.
Well, that goes back further than that, But this—it's really a collection agency they came up with in 1971, I think it was, but they didn't exist before that. Income tax kind of really moved mostly during World War II, if I recall. That's when it kind of came about, and. It might have been a war tax or something, but then they never got rid of it, and they called it an income tax. I think that's how it came about being. I should look into that. Huh? The 16th Amendment, that was back in 1913, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, and you got the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve Act was back then, too, and the 16th Amendment was back then.
That actually sort of the thing just followed after once the Federal Reserve Act and the
right and that became unfortunately stabilized, I think, by 1930 or around that time, and they had become pretty powerful by that point and created the banks and stuff like I said, the IRS appeared in about 1971. There is a Cooper, it's called the Cooper file. I think we have it up on our website here. It might be under education. I'm pretty sure we have it up here somewhere. You can find the Cooper file. And it's a very interesting read.
I probably should go to the search box to say Cooper file to
they don't seem to work that well on sites for some reason, but you can try it. Maybe you'll find it. Let me see. I'll put Cooper in and see what happens. Cooper, let's see if that shows up. I'm not getting anywhere with it. All right, well, it's on our website somewhere. I'll try to locate it. I saw a couple of things I was looking for. Well, I know there's a couple of things we have on our website. I know we got Blackstone up there, but I didn't see it when I looked under education, so I got to look around to see where I have it and should be moved under education.
Okay.
All right, appreciate the call, Ross. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we've come to the end of our program. It's 3 minutes before midnight here in New York, and sometimes I go away late. I'm glad tonight I'm going to try to get off a little early. So, Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. Thanks for coming, and let's get active out there as much as we can. I know I'm having problems getting my committee of safety going because we can't find a place to have the meeting. So hopefully that's going to change soon. Hopefully this, well, it's spring now, but sometime before spring ends or the beginning of summer, hopefully we're going to be able to get our meetings going here, and I'm going to try to organize New York as best I can. And everyone else should be trying to organize their counties, so get involved. And once you get your counties going, look to your sister counties and other counties and try to get them to do what you're doing. And let's take back our republic. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.